Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, another edition of Leave the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. We got a lot of stuff to talk about boxing here on Leave the Ring. We got Andre Berto, who's going to be coming on talking about his exciting fight with Robert the Ghost Guerrero from Gilroy, California, among some other guests that are going to be tuning in here on Leave the Ring and talking it up with us, some boxing. Hey, first off, let's talk about this weekend's fights. We got to get to it. Starting off with Stevenson and the Canadian fighter, which was on Wealth TV against I'm having stuff fall on top of me over here, Gabe, to get the show going. Anyways, and that's how excited I am about this fight that just happened this past weekend. But Superman Stevenson, who got in a hell of a fight, I think, to set up the whole week, to get the whole week just rolling for us fight fans and stuff. I thought the Stevenson fight in Canada was just a phenomenal fight.
Oh.
You know, which he fought against Don George, right?
Yeah.
And George, man, just showed tremendous heart. He showed tremendous skill along with that heart. But at the same time, Stevenson, I thought, you know what? Honestly, I thought that George had the style that was going to be plex for Stevenson. And it was going to be one of those things where we're going to find out how good Superman is. And I think we found out how good he really is. But at the same time, I think we found out how dedicated and how big of a heart Don George has stepping in the ring. Because not only was he dropped, he got back up. And when he got back up, he fought hard. He fought back. Stevenson, for a minute, I thought he was gassing out. For a minute, I thought that he was going to fold. For a minute, I thought that Don was going to pull it. I thought he was going to be able to take over. And it was just a back-and-forth war. There was no disappointment. There was no pause in the minutes of the fight. Wealth TV did a great job by promoting this, hosting this fight. And I think it left a lot of fans. If you didn't get Wealth TV, which, you know, I had to go back and register for free. And I was happy that I did, because honestly, I wasn't going to do it because I couldn't find that Wealth TV in the beginning. But the second time around, Sweet Boxing, they're the ones that told me just go on their website, and he threw the link at me, and there's no regrets there at all, Gabe. I don't know what you thought about that fight. I thought it was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, it was ridiculous. I thought it was, in some ways, you know, it was kind of overshadowed. It reminded me of the fight we were talking about with Don Chargan a few weeks back, Larios Vasquez 2, which happened up in Sacramento at the Memorial Auditorium on a Friday, and for one day it was fight of the year, and then the next day, you know, Gotti Ward happened, and unfortunately, for George and Stevenson, and not unfortunately for us, Rios Alvarado happened the very next day. This fight was awesome. I mean, George, you know, a guy can get hit to the chin and dropped, you know, flash knockdown. We've seen a guy get up and recover from that and be okay. It's pretty rare to see a guy get hit to the body, and then, you know, not once but three times and still continue. I mean, he was dropped early on twice. And then got up to extend the fight late, and then I think he got dropped in the ninth again to the body. That's so rare, and you could literally see George in the corner when he was getting hit to the body by Stevenson. That straight left that kept ripping into him. It was pure will that kept him going. It's unfortunate we were going to possibly have him on as a guest tonight, but he's winning in the World Series of Poker, so he's not able to join us this evening. He's actually winning like right as we speak.
You know, the thing, though, too, is when we talk about just will by getting back up, I think we have to contribute that there's condition as well. Because when you take a body shot like that, you know, and you've got some softness around that body, normally your body's going to just say, no, you're not getting back up. But his legs were conditioned. They were able to push him back up to stand. And he was able to use his legs to try to, you know, get some breathing room, get some breathing time. And that was a really big up for himself, is to have that conditioning. That's why it's so important to have that road work. That it's so important to make sure you're in the gym and you're consistently just working at it, you know. And we kind of saw that it saved him, and he was able to recover, get back up, and continue and make it a great, great, interesting fight. At the same time, he did lose the fight, but I think he gained a lot of fans from that fight.
Oh, without question. I mean, George, it's a kind of a fight that, you know, because he went out on his shield. I mean, his dad was telling him, I think it was his dad trainer, you know, go out there and just knock this guy out. Because late with Stevenson, you know, I thought it was a very good fight for Stevenson. Let me back up. It was kind of like, you know, the Carson Jones-Kell Brook fight. We're going to see this weekend what Kell Brook has learned out of that fight. I think we're going to see it more when he really steps up, you know, to the world championship level. But it was an important fight for a guy. You know, Stevenson's an anomaly. He's 35 years old, yet he's got less than 20 fights, and he hasn't really been tested. He's like an old prospect. But that power is obviously real, and we got to see everything in his game. And Sugar Hill, the second to Manny Stewart, who's been apprenticing under him for years and years, really showed his mettle as a trainer. He helped Stevenson remain calm. There was never any panic, even when Stevenson started to tire and George seemed to be turning the tide. They kept their man on game plan, and he, you know, some people say, you know, yeah, you can get him tired and he's going to be vulnerable. But I think he won't be as tired coming out of a fight like this. He'll know how to relax and meet out his energy, not go too crazy. He knows he can go the distance and still stop a guy. I thought it was a great fight all around, but it was particularly great for both men. Their stocks rise. Stevenson proved himself in a tough fight. George shows that he brings it every time. I think he unloaded the gun the way he didn't do it against Edwin Rodriguez. And so for that alone, I think he can come away somewhat satisfied. And communicating with him, he didn't seem bummed. I mean, shit, he's playing in the World Series of Poker. He's not that bummed.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree and stuff, you know. And that 168 division is starting to look a little sweeter, even though of the thought of Andre Ward being king, it's going to be a minute or for a while that you're going to see him being dethroned, or he dethrones himself by moving up in weight. Stevenson is improving. He's showing that speed, and he's showing that power is a big factor. Love to see what Edwin Rodriguez could possibly do with them, or like to see what Don George would do in a rematch, you know, seeing that he's got more of a – I honestly, with the knockdowns, and even what you say right now that he's in his World of Series, to me, it kind of just seems that there's a confidence build there. You know, he weathered that storm. Now he understands what he can go through the fire. He can take the burns. So with the fight with Edwin Rodriguez, to me, it was a reserve Don George. It was a reserve bomb because he didn't want to explode with La Bomba.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, George, I mean, I think George is who he is, you know, if he can't get you out of there with his power. But he's a guy that if you matched him right, you know, you could get some wins with him. I mean, like any fighter, if you matched him well, you could do that. There's one guy I'll bring up, you know, Danny Jacobs, who's a friend of the show, certainly a friend of mine, is fighting this weekend. And the guy he's facing, you know, is one of the most built-up records I've ever seen. You know, it happens. You got and rightly so. Danny hasn't fought in a year, you know. He's quality. He's a quality fighter, but he hasn't fought in a year, and he's coming off, you know, cancer. So, yeah, he's going to have something of a gimme in this one. But you know, with Don George, I think like he's a guy that's perfect to me for like NBC Sports and for that, you know, main event series. That's a guy that you would want out there kind of representing the sport. Stevenson too, you know, those are our best and brightest. And how great was it, Dave, that Friday night we had the Bell Center. The next morning we had David Price just knocking the hell out of Audley Harrison in one round,
right,
over in England. And then Rios Alvarado brings it home. You know, I thought that was, it just shows, like, you know, and then UFC had their best fighter fighting Stephen Bonner in a fight that lasted, like, you know, a couple minutes. We're not going anywhere.
No, I don't even think so. I mean, even with some fight fans are questioning. No, they're not really fight fans, and they're questioning prospects out there. I thought we had a great display of prospects on the undercard of the Top Rank. We saw some really good back and forth action, preferably with Garcia and Ramon. That was a great, great, great back and forth war. Ended in a draw. And then with Jose Benavides Jr., you know, which he was making a very common mistake that we're starting to see more and more with prospects, which is they're pulling their heads back. They're pulling themselves back and going in a straight line. Rather being the taller guy and knowing there's going to be a left hook or something over the top, rather than them going trying to go under their punches, they're pulling back. And we saw the result of making that big, big, very big mistake of pulling the head back and stuff. So we had a great night of fights.
Oh, yeah. You know, let me jump to the George Stevenson fight back again. You know, it was an observation I made during the fight. I thought that he – what I loved about the fight was that how many times you sit in the you know, at your couch side or ring side – and you yell at the ring, do this, you know, or you say beforehand, this guy's got to do this, this, and this to beat this other guy because he's limited. But if he pulls these things off, he'll be okay. And I thought George needed to, you know, fight economically, but get to the body, fight, you know, kind of pressure to test the legs of the older Stevenson, you know, and really just kind of keep that high guard, and he'd be okay. The one thing I left out, he did all those things. The one thing I left out was move to his left. He just wouldn't move to his left. He kept stepping over to his right, which is right into the, you know, right into the danger zone of that left hand of Stevenson. It kept hurting him all night. That was one thing. I wanted his corner was emotional, but I wasn't hearing, you know, move to your left. You know,
right.
I wasn't hearing any sort of instructions. But getting into the Rios and Alvarado fight was just—it's hard to describe, dude. You know, I've been there for. For now three, I guess, fight of the year candidates, you know, maybe four. But this one, the fifth and the sixth round alone, blood coming out of Rios' mouth, straight into the air. It just exploded out of his face. It was crazy. You could see it as it left his face and then kind of disappear because of the darkness of the night, and then the blood went up into the lights, you know, so you could see it again. It was like one of those. It was like a movie moment. I mean, just it was unbelievable, that fight. And the way it started, and you could see Alvarado wanted a box, and, you know, Rios just went right at his body and kind of, like, came so close to him. He kept, like, leaning up on him and then would be in position to be inside. He didn't just close the distance. He, like, jumped onto Alvarado, and there was a point where they just decided to go for it. And the way it just, in terms of tempo, ramped up each round, like getting more and more violent and more, you know, the output just going up and up and up until Alvarado got hurt and then the fight ends. It's just rare, man. You just don't see that.
No, you don't. Not at all. I mean, I thought the whole speed factor for Don George puzzled him a little bit, and I think that's why we didn't see him stepping over. I think that's why there was some hesitation. But what I did see that he had another gear, and that gear was to step it up a little bit. And he did try to go for broke. He did try to land those big shots, you know. But I thought Stevenson did a great job. He attacked when he needed to attack, and he got out when he needed to get out. And he worked that body early, and it was early on, you know. And I just wondered how much did Don George had to muster up? How much did he have to really dig in deep, even without all those body shots? You know, I truly have to believe that it took every little ounce of energy he had left to try to muster up a hard combination, to try to muster up some punches behind those, you know, behind the punches that he was throwing, especially from his right hand. So, Stevenson, I don't take nothing away from him. I thought he did a fantastic job. I thought he stuck to a very good game plan, going to the body, going back to the head. And then when he did tire out, I thought he did a fantastic job of trying to take breaks and knowing that, you know what, I'm just not going to get this guy out right away. He didn't really rely on his power. I didn't see that. Maybe I could be wrong, but in my eyes and what I was watching, I thought after he saw he knocked him down a few times, he resorted back to trying to box a little bit more rather than trying to be the power hitter.
Yeah. I think, you know, what's weird about to me with Alvarado is that he appears to be, I don't mean this in a rude way. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Cintron in that they're both wrestlers and they were high level wrestlers. You know, they were talented at it and they switched over to boxing and they both use that same kind of shoulder roll for whatever reason. And they both don't seem quite comfortable. They're comfortable like slugging it out and being physical like that, but they're not quite comfortable being a boxer puncher. You can just see it, you know. It's like any guy that comes from another sport comes over and is not that comfortable. Wrestlers seem to be okay with the contact part, but the being a smooth boxer doesn't come naturally to them. The footwork, everything has been hardwired into them, so it's hard to switch over. That's just my opinion of just watching it. The gym I train in has a lot of MMA guys, so I kind of watch them try to box, and they all look the same way. You know, they're a little wider, and it's
right.
just funky, you know. I think that, I mean, when you factor it in, it kind of makes me wonder about Guerrero Berto, which is something we'll talk about later with Andre at 7 o'clock when he comes on. Rios, on paper, you think about it, and like if this is a war – his skills on the inside are superior. He's made to be an inside fighter. He's very, very good at it. Alvarado can take a pounding and come back and like gut it out. Maybe he's the bigger guy. But you know, when you look at it that way, just objectively, skill versus skill, I mean, I probably should have gone with Rios because the nature of the fight actually kind of plays into his hands. I just didn't think physically he'd be able to handle a guy like Alvarado, but he wasn't that much smaller than him, you know, looking at them live. It didn't look like a welterweight facing 140. It just looked like two solid 140-pound guys, you know. Even though they were both, I think Alvarado was 152, Rios was 149. There wasn't that much of a size difference. It really wasn't a factor at all. I think what was just a factor is Rios just knows how to go to the body, and that uppercut hook and then hook uppercut combinations that he throws.
I think
beautiful. You know?
I honestly thought that it was the variety of punches that Rios throws. That was the difference in this fight where, you know, Alvarado, in my opinion, it was repetitive. So you kind of knew exactly what was coming at you. You were able to embrace those punches. You know, when you know a guy that's only going to throw a 1-2-3, you're able to anticipate that and able to tense your body a little bit more to kind of, you know, shield up and absorb the punishment, where Brandon was, he mixed it up, so you really never knew exactly what he was going to throw. The only thing that I would see was that he was looking for, and rightfully so, was that uppercut. And it was surprising that Alvarado never saw it.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's the thing. He found that right hand, that chopping right hand, I think like in the sixth. Maybe he found it a little bit before that, but he landed it right on the temple like late in the sixth. And you could see that he saw something. And he went right back to it, and that's the punch that did it. And, you know, a lot of people say that they didn't like the stoppage, but I thought Pat Russell did a great job. You know, he was having actually a rough card. You know, that Jose Ramon fight it had a funky ending, and I'll get into that in a minute. I don't want to go too sidetracked. But on this part, you know, I think that because of that, there was a feeling, oh, Russell screwed it up again. He's having a bad night, and it kind of carried over. But looking at the fight objectively and then watching it again on TV, Alvarado didn't throw punches back for a very long time. And you could see the body language. You really can't see it as well on HBO. When he got hit with that first right that hurt him and kind of spun him to the ropes, like he lost his balance. Like, he got caught in the ear temple area. He was kind of screwed, you know, at that point. And I don't need to see his head swivel and snap back for me to know the fight was over. He was in that same Yuri Boy Compass position. Remember when Trinidad finished him off? I didn't need to see his head snap back like that. You know, he was done as far as I was concerned.
I don't know, man. I just thought that because what was really, you know, behind this fight, and I saw you saw both guys just really leaving it in the ring, and the amount of punishment they were giving each other, that they could have been a standing eight count. You know, I'm not really opposed to the stoppage, but at the same time, I was like, you know, this kid was taking it and he was dishing it out as best as he could. You know,
sure.
They should have given him maybe that standing eight count, that opportunity. Give him the chance to see, look at his eyes, you know, see if he can walk forward, see how fast he recovers, you know.
Sure.
But at the same time, I'm not going to be objective to anybody saying, no, it was a good stoppage, you know, because of this. Because these guys were landing some heavy shots. These shots were punches to knock their opponent out. So only those two know their bodies. Only those two know really, honestly. Well, Mike Alvarado obviously would know within himself if that was the right call. Obviously, he's a fighter. He's going to say it wasn't the right call, but his body obviously is going to be honest and truthful. And what we saw that night with the body language, it was being truthful. It wanted this. It wanted the bout to be stopped.
Yeah, I mean, I think. I mean, I had a great seat for it, for the stoppage. It's just in general, but I was in about the fifth row, with Steve Kim's moving head in front of me. But when he slid to the right, I slid to the left, and I saw a great view of the stoppage, of him getting hurt and the stoppage. It was like Alvarado was looking right at me, and the ref wasn't in the way until he, you know, jumped in. I thought he was on his way. I really did. I mean, it might have been a little, like you said, he could have said the ropes held him up, and so it's a knockdown, and you go to the standing eight, which would be the only way I think that he could have allowed that to happen. But because it's not really a standing eight. You know, he's just giving him the eight count. Or
right, giving him that eight count and stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's like a loophole in the rule.
Right.
He could have done that. He could have done that, but he was on his way. I thought he was on his way. You know, and if he hadn't stepped in and let it go a couple more punches.
That's the argument, though. That's the argument. I mean, you think about, you know, going back and thinking about Gotti and Ward. When Gotti looked like he was done and he was out, his head was swiveling all over the place.
Sure.
You imagine if the ref stepped in.
But he also didn't throw punches for like 20 seconds or 15 seconds.
That's really true. But
that's the thing, you know.
I think we can go back to the Ward and Gotti and kind of count how long it took him to throw any punches back. You know,
round nine you're talking about? Yeah, that's true.
You know,
that's a great point.
So
you know?
That's when some fans felt a bit cheated. Not with the fight itself. I don't think anybody can sit back and go, I felt cheated. You know what? Let me tell you this, okay? This is when you know this was a great fight. When you got non-boxing fans showing up at 6 in the morning talking about, hey, did you see those two Mexican kids going at it? Dude, did I see these two Mexican kids going at it? I've been telling you to tune in and watch kids go at it, you know? And that was it, you know? I mean, and going back, you know, I got a little sidetracked there, but going back, I think that's what some fans, including myself, was like, what if? But obviously, the what if is, what if they get the rematch? What happens next? Or where does Rios go from here? And how about Alvarado? I don't think either one of these guys. Obviously, Rios' stock went up. Alvarado, I think it's just stay stagged. It should, because there's no shame of losing the way he did. The kid's just a complete warrior.
Yeah. I mean, there was a great moment, too. There's just, you know, hang on one second. I'm letting David Chen know that our guest is calling from a certain address or a area code.
Actually, I got him right now. Let me patch him in if you want.
All right. There was just a great moment when Rios won that HBO didn't catch, that he ran and he jumped on the post and just like screamed into the night. And I was just like, that's his high. Before the fight, he told me, this is my high. This, you know, getting hit in the head, getting hurt even, is kind of my high. I love it. And for him to win the way he did, like 8,000 or it was like a little almost 7,000 people screaming his name, going crazy in that little bowl, which is like a, you know, gladiator arena, and him like screaming into the sky. I was like, that's as pure, that's as high and as close to God as that guy ever gets. You
absolutely
know?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what the gladiators are all looking for, is just that one moment, that one big moment. But let's patch in our first guest, Keandre Leatherwood. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Not too much. How's stuff going with you guys?
Doing fantastic, brother. Thanks for joining us here on the radio.
Okay.
This is Gabriel. I'm Gabriel Montoya. This is Dave Duenas. Welcome to the show, Keandre. You just knocked somebody the hell out. I thought it was four rounds. You knocked him out in one round, Marcus Brooks, last week. And you're on a bit of a winning streak. This is your third fight this year. Talk to us a little bit about I know you had a loss back in 2011, but you've slowly worked your way into the win column. Talk to me about that process.
You know, I just had to snap back. You know, I took a fight. You know, it really wasn't the right time for it, and you know, I had the wrong influences around me. And you know, I got back with my old trainer. You know, and I recently signed with Boxing 360 earlier this year. Mm-hmm. You know, he got me back in the ring. You know, I signed with him maybe at the end of April. He told me, I'm going to give you a month to make sure you're ready. You know, he got me back in there June 2nd. You know, I had a kind of shifty fight. You know, I thought I won, but they gave me a draw to a, you know, kind of local kid. He got me right back in the ring a few weeks later. So I got two fights in June. Then I just fought this past weekend. So, you know, I fought a pretty tough, just a journeyman type of guy. But, you know, I had only been stopped once, and that was by Jason Escalera earlier this year. You know, Jason stopped him in the fourth, but I actually stopped him in the third. So talk
to me about, let's back up, because I don't know if a lot of people know who you are. I know you were on another show recently, but I always try to do, when we have a prospect on or a new fighter, we back up to the beginning and you give me your history, because I understand you have a solid amateur background and everything. Talk to me about how you first got into the sport.
Oh, actually, when I was younger, when I was about 11, you know, I used to get into a lot of street fights and got in a lot of trouble, you know, as a kid, you know, school and stuff like that. So my stepfather, he used to box, so he took me to the gym. And I actually started boxing up in Cincinnati, Ohio. You know, I came up watching, like, Ricardo Williams Jr. I trained alongside of Rasheed Warren, Adrian Bronner, you know, those type of guys. So, I took my fair share of hard days in the gym being, you know, with those kind of guys and just starting out, you know what I mean? But it was just something I always loved, and I was driven to do, you know. So I turned pro back in 2008, and, you know, from there on, it's just been a kind of shifty road back and forth. But, you know, I've been in a few bad situations. But since I got signed with Mario at Boxing 360, you know, I think a lot of things are about to change, you know. Look for me to be ranked next year,
You were kind of rushed into that fight, your one loss.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you were facing a guy that was 11-0, and I'm looking at your record now, and it's not completely built up, but it's a prospect record. You know, they're just teaching you different things and kind of moving you along, and then all of a sudden, you know, you go from fighting a 2-11 guy, and you're mm-hmm. already in like your eighth fight, right? And this guy's 11-0, and you're at the Mandalay Bay, coming from like Water Oaks Farm Arena in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Yeah.
Was it just the lights were too bright? It was a different class. What was it that went wrong?
Like I said, you know, I was kind of rushed into the fight. You know, I didn't really have any handlers at the time, and you know, I just had the wrong influences around me. You know, I went from fighting fours to a 10-round title fight. You know, I didn't really think too much of the guy when I seen him, but you know, they kind of BS'd me around for about a week and a half, and so I took the fight with like less than 2 weeks' notice. You know, so it just was the wrong time, you know. So, like I said, you know, I'm with somebody who cares now, who give me the right fights, you know, and move me along. So I should be in eight shortly, and then we're going straight to a 10-round title fight. You know what I mean?
I've talked to guys about you, and they talk about your boxing skill, your boxing ability. Do you think that's your greatest strength? Is it your power? Describe yourself as a fighter.
I feel like I'm a boxer puncher. You know, I have definitely my hand speed. I feel like is my biggest attribute. But for all the people who think it's just flash, you know, they can have somebody who's been hit by me. There's definitely some power behind it.
Do you think that's why Omar Henry talk to me about that situation. You guys were going to fight, and then all of a sudden he decided not to.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, I was ready to go. You know, my promoter called me with it. You know, I wasn't objecting to nothing, you know. So that's why I said, you know, the type of guy I am, the way I'm training right now, I'm really not turning anything down. You know, anybody who call box, all they got to do is call Boxing 360. You know, he was in the process of trying to get everything worked out, and, you know, then stuff just went south. But you know how it go in this game, you know.
Now, what do you mean it went south, though? I mean, what exactly was the story in his part that he wasn't able to get in the ring with you?
I mean, I don't have the whole story. You know, all I know is 1 minute, it was about to be a goal.
Uh-huh.
Next minute, when I heard back from my people, it was just like, you know, it was off the table. So,
wow.
You know, so I don't know if his handlers ain't feel like it was the right fight for him or what, you know, but, you know, like I said, I'm definitely open to it. And if it comes back along, you know, on down the line, we can definitely do it. You know what I mean? Because with both of us climbing right now, it's bound to happen sooner or later. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, maybe they felt like he was, you know, you don't want to risk it. But, you know, at the same time, it seemed like, well, Omar's a guy that's talks about being a fighter, but doesn't actually fight. You know, when it comes down to it.
I mean, I ain't turning nothing down with my collar right now. You know, that's just the way I feel. You know, I leave it up to my handlers to, you know, set up everything. But you know, whatever they call me with, it's never a turned down response from me. I stay in the gym. I stay ready now. Because, you know, like we talked about previously, you know, with my loss, you know, I had the wrong people around me, and it was at a time I wasn't staying ready. You know what I mean? So now,
yeah.
You know, I never get caught like that again. I stay in the gym. I stay ready. I stay training. You know, so you know, no matter what kind of call I get, I'm always ready. You know what I mean?
With that first loss, walk me through it. I mean, you get that first loss. What's the first thing that went through your? I mean, that you know, you end up questioning yourself about.
My first thought was I just had to get back in the gym. Hold on one second. Yeah. So my first thought was get back in the gym, get back ready. You know, because I really didn't feel like, you know, with a fight that went how I felt it should have. You know, it's definitely a guy I feel like I can beat, and I'm definitely open to, you know, doing that John Jackson fight again as well. You know, because I feel like I got something to prove right there, and I got, you know, I got a score to settle.
Right.
You know, but a lot of times, though, I mean, a lot of times I've seen fighters lose to a guy, then they end up learning from that, and they end up exceeding a lot more than the guy that beat them in you know, previously, so they never get to meet up again. But yeah. Do you think that that's going to mess with you mentally, even though you're going to progress?
I mean, no, definitely not. I've definitely moved past it. You know, I feel like, you know, it was just one to grow on. You know, I learned a lot from it. And in all honesty, it actually got me signed, you know, because, you know, I was in a privileged situation that my promoter now seen the fight, and he actually signed me off of it, you know, and that's something that doesn't usually happen, you know. It's not too many, and that made me feel a certain kind of way about myself and what he must have seen in me, because most guys don't get signed off a loss, you know what I mean?
Right.
He's an interesting guy. I mean, I'm pretty familiar with their company, and Mario has an eye for talent and for action talent, particularly. Like Joel Diaz is a guy that he kind of just scouted and somebody recommended, and he just went with him, and he turned out to be a really solid fighter. So, you know, I think it's interesting that you guys kind of hooked up. He's one of those guys that knows how to find a hidden gem, and it's, you know, like looking at your bio and stuff, you came out of Ohio, right?
I came out of Cincinnati.
Right. So you know all those guys, Rashi Warren and all those guys, right?
Oh, yeah, I trained alongside them. I went to tournaments with them. It was at one point in time, you know, we were thick as thieves.
That's just where you train out of now?
I train out of Atlanta, Georgia now.
Oh, okay. Is that just – why is that? I mean, do you think it's just better, like you said, to get away from the influences, or is it just
I actually got shifted around some, you know. I trained down there with Deontay Wilder in Tuscaloosa for a while. And seeing him progress as he came up and, you know, made the Olympics and all that different stuff. You know, I was actually here in Georgia before that with Brad Solomon. Me and him were training alongside each other for a while. And, you know, back now, you know, not too long ago, I was in the gym, and it was me, Toriano Johnson, and Brad Solomon. And that was, you know, we all sparred, trained. You know, that was our team at that point in time. So, you know, I've always been around pretty good people.
See, it says you're light middleweight, but I notice your weights, you're fighting more like a middle. What do you prefer?
I'm kind of growing some now. You know, I'm selling more to myself. So right now we're doing 60, you know, but I am open to offers at 54 as well, depending on what comes through. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, so what's immediately next for you?
Trying to get back in the ring. Mario, after I knocked that guy out, he was very pleased. He's just like, we're trying to get you back in the ring as soon as possible. So, you know, hopefully in the next few weeks, maybe I'll be lacing back up.
Hey, you knock a guy out in one round. I mean, it's, you know, it was almost the full round. You knocked him out at 241. But still, I mean, you probably could stay pretty close to shape, right, and just go at it.
I mean, definitely. I mean, that's why I said, you know, I really didn't get a whole lot of work out of it. You know, I got a little work out of it, and it's back in the gym. You know, I'm just waiting on the next call. at the stage I'm in right now, I got to stay ready. I never know what kind of call can come through. It could
absolutely
be something as minor. It could be something as minor as a small fight and just another learning experience and getting another win, or it could be something, you know, along the lines of another type of Omar Henry type of fight, or you know, some of that nature. So, you know, I'm ready for whatever. You know, whether it's something small or something big, I'm just staying training, staying, you know, getting a lot of sparring in. You know, so that's just the way I feel about it.
What do you think about Deontay Wilder? I'm just curious, as somebody that's watched him come up, how do you think of his development?
Like I see it on the last show I was on, they asked me a little bit about him. Like I told him, you know, this is a guy when he came up, you know, he really didn't have a lot of experience. You know, he had very limited amateur experience. So they knew turning him pro, he was going to be a project, you know what I mean? So I
right.
think there's a lot of people who want to see him moved faster than he was, you know, but when a guy only had 20-some amateur fights and he, you know, in the heavyweight division, you know, I guess they felt like they needed to move him a little bit more carefully. But I see that he's about to fight the co-main on that next Amerikan undercard. And so, you know, I definitely feel like, you know, he's going to be in there with some stiffer opposition in that fight. But like I said, I mean, the guy's way lacks in skill, and he's learning still. The guy's power is like an equalizer, you know what I mean? I mean, he comes up here and spars, you know, at least a couple times a month. And, I mean, he's like knocking guys out and sparring.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to Russ Amber, who's on the show, and Deontay. I actually talked to Deontay himself, but Russ was talking about how he's, yeah, you've got this guy with all the tools. You know, he's like what 6'7". He's gigantic,
right?
Yeah.
He's got, you know, when it's working and you're watching him, it's working. You know, you're like, wow, that's
yeah.
the next American heavyweight. Then, you know, I've also seen him almost get knocked out in a fight.
Yeah,
wasn't televised, but Russ said he's learning how to like calm down and box.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what they're working on. I mean, they seeing what needs to be worked on. I guess that's why he's been moved the way he has. But
he felt though he was a little cheated too. You know, coming out of the Olympics, turning pro, because remember when we had him on a long time ago in one of our prospect shows? He said, you know what? As big as I am, there's none of these really big heavyweights want to spar with me. So, and I think the reason was is because they looked at him. There's the kid that has the size, the athleticism. Why help him develop, you know, and so he can be a major threat to me? So I think they've kind of kept him behind the scene, keep him on the shelf, and allow him to fight smaller heavyweights, which takes him a lot longer to learn how to fight tall and big.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but why at the end of the day, on their side of the field, you know, why would you build up your opponent? You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
You know, yep. So
if I were them, I would try to find a way. I mean, I think they're going to fight a Klitschko. I don't.
I mean, you know, he actually is over in camp with Klitschko now, I think, getting him ready for the next fight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's actually.
Oh, is that right? There you go. I was just going to say, he should tell them, we're not going to fight, but let me learn from you, you know?
Exactly.
Because those guys, I mean, if anybody knows how to be 6'7 and go 12 rounds, it's those guys, you know?
Exactly.
I think at first he was going to go to camp with Wok, and then he actually got flipped back around, and he went with Klitschko.
Well, that's kind of cool. Yeah, I guess they were looking for something.
I mean, they both tall guys, so both of them needed a tall sparring partner, you know what I mean?
Right. Yep, exactly.
That's an interesting point. I just think all those guys should not aim for the Klitschko's. They should be aiming for the Klitschko's retirement when the belts go free. It's going to be a frenzy, all these big guys fighting for a belt. You know, they can't fight for them all. We're not going to have a unified champ for a while. But if I had Seth Mitchell, I wouldn't be aiming him at a Klitschko. I'd be aiming him for their retirement. That's just me. Build him up as a draw, you know, and get him, like, experience so he's ready for the moment. But nobody's beating those guys.
I mean, but you got to, you know, as a fighter – you know, it's kind of a pride. It's kind of a pride type of issue. I mean, how can you not aim at want to beat the best? You know, I mean,
absolutely.
that's just a thing about it. That's even like me. You know, it's a shorter road I probably could go when I get to that point. But I want to fight the best so I can then be known as the best or the best conqueror. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I don't think too either. It would have hurt a Seth Mitchell or a Wilder to go after him and may possibly get a shot because, you know, they're still young and still, you know, able to develop it themselves, that when the Klitschko's do leave, at least they have that, you know what I mean? It really doesn't diminish them. They're still able to fight each other to get that belt. So I'm in agreement, and yes, they shouldn't go after them, but at the same time, I'm thinking, you know what, it may not hurt as much.
Yeah, I mean, because you never know. I mean, in boxing, it's any given night.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, the wrong shot on anybody, chin, temple, either way it go, it can change anybody's life. You know what I mean?
any given night and any given punch.
I mean, because that's just like when I was on the other show a few days ago, you know, they had Darnell Boone on, and they was talking about when he knocked out Adonis Stevenson. You know, that's a guy who they've been building up really big right now. You know, he's in line for a title shot right now, and Gianna Darnell put him out.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, the dingling, man. Rang his bell.
Yep, he sure did.
It's going to be an interesting journey, man. I'm excited for you that you've kind of begun a new leg and that it's going so positively for you so far. I hope you get another fight very soon, man, and we get to see it, you know.
Definitely.
So, well, thank you for coming on, man, and we'll definitely keep you in our sights and have you back on sometime.
Okay, I really appreciate you guys having me on.
No problem, brother. Take care.
Our pleasure. All right, take care. Have a great night.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Keandre Leatherwood is a prospect from 360 Boxing. When you talk about Mario and that company alone, having an eye for talent and able to swoop up some guys that some other promotional companies would kind of oversee, they got a good crop of fighters, man. They really do, you know. And the thing that I like about this promotional company is that they're okay and willing to match their fighters and to test them, even early on a signage of the fighter and stuff. So
yeah,
it's not surprising that they looked at a tape and saw this kid lose on that fight, but at the same time go, you know what, we got a good fighter. He's an exciting fighter. Let's see what we can do with him. Let's see how we can match him. Maybe match him right now to build back his confidence, but eventually I could see maybe third, fourth fight, they're going to match him equal with somebody to see if they got the goods.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that kid's, you know, promotable. He's got a nice personality. Mm-hmm. You know, he's personable. From what I understand, he was a solid fighter. And that's what you do with a guy like, you know, Marcus Brooks, who's like an experienced vet, but, you know, doesn't really have a winning record or anything. You do take him out in one round.
Absolutely.
Speaking of that.
David Lemieux, what about that knockout?
Exactly. Speaking of taking out dudes in one round.
Wow. Knockout of the year? Do we have knockout of the year already with this guy, David Lemieux, who hasn't, you know, he's been on the losing streak, and he was able to get Raul Munoz, right? Is that the kid that he knocked out?
No,
that was Jermaine Taylor that had him, I believe. What was the name of the Mexican kid? I can't think of him off the top of my head right now. But
that's how hard David Lemieux hit him. You forgot his name.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it was his legs got stuck underneath them when his shoulders and the back of his head landed on the canvas, and then they just flopped right out. You know, and then
Alvaro Gona. He was a goner.
Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as he got hit, unbelievable that left hook. Yeah, and the landing didn't help him, but he wasn't even. It was like helping a drunk out of a bar after he got up after that first knockdown, that straight right that dropped him. And they were like, all right, sir, are you good to walk? All right, here, head out the door. And then some dude just came up and hit him with a left hook. He had no idea what was going on. And Lemieux just jumped all over him. It was
– That first knockdown, I think honestly it ruined the kid because he had a flash knockdown. I think he got up going – is this the hardest you can hit? I can take his punch. Decided to open up with him, and bang.
Over.
It was over.
Over. Yeah, it was like a 90s knockout, too. It was like a Julian Jackson special.
Yeah.
That was just like this stiff-boarded, you know. I haven't seen – you don't see those often. Stevenson had one, I think, earlier this year, but not – we don't see these often. I mean, it was – a lot of times nowadays you see you see a dude, you know, get stropped along the ropes like Mike Alvarado. It's rare to see the pure one punch brutal ass knockout. Yeah, it was against Jesus Gonzalez
back
yeah, back in February. That was another just, you know, I mean, just absolutely stiff boarded him. I love knockouts like that. I feel bad for the guys, but man,
it's just about
one shot like that. Even the Audley Harrison one the next day with David Price, that was. Yet another one round. It was like I think less than a minute blowout. And it was kind of funny. We were watching a college game, and there was a British boxing fan, and then Steve and a couple of his friends and me, and we were getting ready to go over to the Home Depot. We were watching the Canes game first, and we wanted to switch over to the David Price fight. So it was kind of like a bit of a vote, and we flipped over really quick, and he knocked him out in like 1 minute, and we're like, all right, cool. And we went back to the football game. It was just absolutely brutal knockout. Audley shouldn't be licensed anywhere after
no,
that.
No, oddly enough, he keeps getting licensed.
Wow.
You know, let's patent some fight fans before we get our next guest on with us. We're going to be talking about some Eric Morales not passing his drug test, and we'll get really into that. The kid that broke the story is going to be joining us here from Hale Sports. Talk to us about his resource and how he got a hold of the story. It's a good job for him, man. It's really good to see up-and-comer journalists getting their teeth on something juicy like that and not being afraid that they're going to be blackballed or anything like that. They're just reporting what is supposed to be reported in our sport of boxing. But let's patch in some fight fans here. As always, CT wants to talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Rios Alvarado and Bailey versus Alexander. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing tonight?
Great.
Doing great, man.
Yeah. I kind of picked him last week, and I just thought, you know, Rios, by the style of the fight, even though, you know, it had shaky moments with Alvarado, you know, I was thinking, oh, shit, he's going to knock Rios out. I just thought, you know, this type of fight, you know, the way they were fighting it, and Rios, he's just so relentless. It's like he loves this shit. It's just like, I was watching it with a female friend of mine, and she goes, what the fuck, are these guys sick in head or something? And I'm explaining it to her, like, yeah, that's the way these guys fight. You know what I mean? That's, you know, this fight's got, it's got to be like this. It's like a Ward Gotti type fight. But the whole fight, I don't know how the hell he took that uppercut from Alvarado. I think it was in the third round. Alvarado hit Rios with an uppercut. I think it would have dropped almost anybody.
And it was eerie. It was eerie to see the guy take a punch and smile at him. You know what I mean? And kind of like told him, like, yeah, cool. Thank you. You know?
Oh, man. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. To be honest with you, I just think Alvarado got caught up in the moment, you know, and Rios does that to a lot of fighters. He lures you into that type of fight.
Yeah, he does. He basically lets you kind of feel, this guy's easy to hit. I can hit him all night, and it's going to be okay because he needs to be up close with me, and his punches, you're able to really see his punches when he throws them. He's not the quickest guy in the world, but he's really heavy-handed, and he knows how to sneak in those punches. And even though he's not the quickest, he's able to sneak in punches from angles you're not going to see, and that takes some great talent.
Yeah. I applaud both fighters. I want to see, you know, both fighters fight whoever. You know, I think, I don't know if this fight took anything out of each fighter because of the type of brutality it had, but I definitely see what Alvarado does next and what Rios does next. I'm really looking forward to both fighters. I thought it was a great fight, and I'm just stunned by the whole thing. I would definitely like to see Rios fight Matisse next, if he could. If Matisse doesn't get Garcia next,
right.
Definitely put him in with Matisse. You know, I just want to see where they go from there. As far as Bailey and Alexander, I'm looking forward to this fight more than any other fight on the card this Saturday. I just think, you know, I want to see, you know, what Bailey does. He's got to let his hands go a little bit more versus Alexander, because Alexander's going to be a lot more busier to me, I think, than Mike Jones was. I think Alexander's got to be definitely disciplined in this fight, not to get into a brawl. So I think Bailey has that type of punch, almost like a Julian Jackson type knockout puncher. He has a very crushing right hand, and if Alexander's not careful, he's going to get hit with that, and I don't think he's going to get up. So I'm picking Alexander by decision, but maybe a knockdown somewhere in the fight, but maybe by decision.
I don't know, man. We're going to get to a point, I think, probably in the fight schedule where we really have to break these down. But I think there's no reason why Alexander should lose this fight.
I don't think so either. Right.
If he's waiting all night like a sniper, Bailey, with that right hand, he's going to be waiting all night. It's never going to happen. I think the only way it happens is if, like, Alexander tires or does something stupid. But I think if Bailey opens up, I think he's kind of slow and a little bit leaky in the defense, I think that Alexander will be able to take advantage of that. So it's going to be an interesting fight.
I think, too, like what Mike Jones basically showed is if you allow him to be the sniper, you allow him to have that pace and you give him that range, he can execute it. It takes a bit for him to do it, but once he throws it, he can land it. To me, you know, the way to beat Alexander – is to be on top of him the way Timothy Bradley did. And that's something I don't know that Bailey can do.
Right.
You know, he's going to stay on the outside. And that's what's going to make Alexander comfortable and keep him moving and turning Bailey and allow him to fight from an outside distance and not be there in the clear for that sniper shot. So I got to tell you, I'm not too excited about it. And I wasn't really that excited about what Bailey did over Mike Jones, you know, because I know there's no such thing as a lucky punch. But then you got that kind of a feeling that, gee, you know what, if he didn't have that power and Mike didn't make that mistake, what would have happened? So I don't know if he can pull it off again twice, you know, without letting his hands go. And you said it right. He's got to let his hands go. So can he be that much lucky to do again twice? I'm not too sure. I'm not too confident about that. You know, Alexander's definitely going to come out there to fight and may be able to get Bailey, you know, some openings and some chances and stuff. But one punch out of per round is going to have to be a little bit more. So really hard to say. Really hard to say. But then again, Mike Jones was a big kid, where Alexander's not that big, in my opinion.
Yeah, and if I could say one thing about the Guerrero and Brodo fight, not to say this because Brodo's going to be on the air tonight, but I really think it's the wrong fight for Guerrero. I think Brodo's very explosive, and I don't know if, you know, Guerrero has the power to hold him off. I think you got to have something to hold Brodo off a little bit. I mean, Carlos Quintana had a little bit to hold him off for a few rounds. You know, he had some success not being a huge puncher like Guerrero, but he has a little bit of pop. I think with Guerrero, he's got to use his boxing skills, but I don't think it's going to be enough for Berto. I think Berto's too powerful, too fast, and I don't know if Guerrero's comfortable enough in that welterweight division to handle somebody like Berto.
Some good points there. Real good points, man. I'm really interested in this fight. I think this is a great fight for both men. I think this is going to really tell us where Guerrero was at 147 and where Berto's going to go next and stuff. You know, we saw what happened with a guy moving up. Did it drop some notches for his stock? Absolutely. If it happens again, what do we say?
Yeah. I just think I'm sorry.
It's just the big difference between Victor Ortiz, who was dying to move to 147, and Robert Guerrero, who's dying for the paydays at 147. I don't mean to be rude about it, because this is a business, and Robert's made a strategic move to move to 147. I've always felt that he still would have physical advantages that he's kind of given up at 147 at 140. And you look at Berto, and you look at the options that he had. He was looking at, and Dave, just so you know, it's not to text you, Scott is going to text me around 6 to let me know when he's coming.
Okay.
He's in a meeting, I know what storm he's in right now, which is that, you know, you broke a major story and your phone won't stop ringing. So that's where he's at right now. But you look at the options of Berto, and he was looking at what? Bundridge at 154. Who's not exactly a small 54.
Right.
And so Berto was willing to go up there to go after the weak link, but still a big man. Or he's going to fight a guy that just is like one fight removed from 135 pounds and who looks more like a volume puncher against a very limited Selkirk Aydin.
Right.
Know, pretty much a one-armed bandit. It's not hard to tell who's the A side here. They're not fighting in San Jose, where they should be fighting, because Robert Guerrero actually sells tickets, unlike Andre Berto. He should be treated as the draw here. He brings multi-division titles. He just won a belt at 147. And he could actually – a fight of this caliber probably could do very good numbers in San Jose for Robert Guerrero. He should be the A-side.
Honestly, I thought that would have been the right move, is to bring it to San Jose. But
it tells you who the A-side and who's calling the shots here. Is
exactly.
It Golden Boy or is it Al Haymon? Because they're fighting in Ontario at the Citizens Bank Arena, same place that Areola Adamek, which would have done much better real numbers in New Jersey,
right,
where main events had built up a draw, but instead they did it there in Ontario, which made absolutely no sense because Areola is not that much of a draw. And he was actually, you know, he had just come off losing. So I think it just kind of shows you who's calling the shots, because remember, they're blaming it all on Bradley, from what I understand, that he backed out of the fight. That's the party line. But that's not really true, from what I've been told. I heard there was like a $1.2 million that was being offered to Guerrero, but then Golden Boy was only giving him $600,000. I know that Richard's really angry about those numbers and is threatening to sue, but, you know, we know what Richard does when he threatens to sue. Nothing. So I think those are empty words. From what I was told, I understood that, that Guerrero was in the neighborhood of like $750,000 when they offered him this Berto fight. Now you look at the Bradley fight, that's a totally winnable fight for Robert Guerrero. That's the perfect fight for him. A guy that can't punch, that can be outboxed, that Robert's longer and taller than, and his skills, which are considerable, would do well against Bradley. And he's also a southpaw. All that benefits him. But they took that away. We got something better for you. They give him Berto in Ontario? I don't understand. I mean, yeah, he's getting that $1 million, but initially I told him it was $750,000. Then it went up to $1 million. It's just I'm very curious about the whole thing. I think Berto's being treated like the A side, and so I'm going with Berto in this. It just seems like everything kind of plays into his favor, other than the fact that he's kind of coming off a long layoff. But besides that, it's all good for him, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. It's interesting. It's gonna be an action fight, though. I'll give them that. It's gonna be fun.
I think so. I think it's gonna be a great action fight. CT, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm gonna put you back on hold, man. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, man.
Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Don't forget to catch every Sunday night the Boxing Fix at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And then for the Spanish-speaking listeners, you got Noche de Boxeo Monday night at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. But here every Thursday night, the Leaving the Ring show with myself, Dave Duenas, and Mr. Gable Montoya, man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. We're on every Thursday night, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern Time and stuff. Let's talk some boxing here, and we're going to be having the reporter from Scott Hale from Hale Sports come on and talk about the breaking story of Eric Morales, which Golden Boy's Richard Schaefer has confirmed is true about the positive testing that they received a little later. But let's patch in some fight fans here that do want to talk about Eric Morales. Let's get Mike, who wants to talk Morales right now. What's up, brother? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
Nothing. Today I was in class, right, and I read on Twitter about how Golden Boy was giving out tickets or whatever for free and stuff, and I go to school right by the Barclays Center. So as soon as I got out of class, I went to the Barclays Center or whatever, and it was a big line for people trying to get the tickets, you know? And I didn't see anybody get any free tickets, but I saw the prices were really slashed down, like, considerably. Like, I bought two tickets for $25 each for the $106 section, you know? So mm-hmm. I made out great. Then I come home and I see Morales has tested positive for steroids, and I see he's still going to fight. And I'm like, man, this is my favorite fighter ever. Like, I want to see him fight, but what if he was to kill Garcia? You know what I mean? Like, you're going to let a guy you know who did a bad who's on a substance.
Yeah.
And what if he killed Garcia? I don't see it ever happening, but I mean, this is boxing. It's possible, you know? Like, what if he killed Garcia and they let him in the ring like that, you know? It's scary stuff, you know.
Well, I think it's scary, too, that they won't disclose what the substance is. And I understand the privacy issues, and they haven't tested the B sample. But this was what Richard Schaefer was mad about with Peterson.
Right.
That they didn't have control of the results. They weren't informed, so they could make other contingencies. Well, I mean, they found out Tuesday, according to one of the websites that's reported on it, Richard Schaefer's press agent, Rick Reno, on Boxing Scene. And so, you know, according to them, they knew it Tuesday. I mean, the fight should be off. I'm sorry. You tested positive for a drug before
right.
a fight. It's not – I mean, if this was the NFL, yeah. the guy got popped, well, they'd probably say something in the off season. They'd cover it up. But or if it was the Olympics. But still, I mean, you're if your platform is to clean up the sport with this drug testing – we didn't even know they were doing drug testing. I didn't know that you saw it was doing it. You know, since I've broken all those stories, it's funny. Everybody's hitting me on Twitter. What do you know? I'm like, well, let's do the math. USADA, New York's commission, and Golden Boy. You really think I know what's going on in this one? You know, I'm actually kind of out of the loop on this one. I'm not even sure what lab they use. They might have used the UCLA Medical Lab, but since the fight's in New York, I don't know if they use something closer to their area. Who knows? I'll have to find out. But as a fan, I mean, do you feel cheated by this? I mean, do you feel like you don't want to go?
Well, I mean, I got the tickets for dirt cheap, so I can't really complain.
Right.
And then there's the second part of me that's like, man, Morales is one of my favorite fighters. I want to see him. I mean, you know, he's a Mexican fighter. Mexican fighters never fight in New York, you know.
Right.
They're always fighting in West Coast or in Vegas. So I'm like, wow, I'm going to probably see him in his last fight. You know, it's kind of like a memorable thing in a way, you know, for a fan. And then it's this. Sure. And then I'm like, do I want to see it? Do I want to see him fighting under these circumstances?
Absolutely. You're right. I mean, do you really want to go and see him? And then, you know, years from now, somebody mentions, I heard you watched the great Eric Morales. Yeah, I did when he was tested positive for a banned substance.
Yeah, for something.
There's a part of me that's like, do I want to see Paulie Malignaggi as the main event? You know,
right.
Morales is the most entertaining fighter, one of the most entertaining fighters of the last 15 years. You know what I mean? Of course, you want to watch Morales fight, but then it's like, I don't know. I'm kind of confused. You know, it's a weird situation.
So you're not a Paulie guy? Is that what you're saying?
No, I like Paulie, but who would you rather watch fight? Who's been in better fights in the last 15 years? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I hear you. I like Paulie, too. And you know, for a guy with no power, he actually does get in there and mix it up.
Yeah. I'm just saying Morales, Pereira, the Madonna fight, the Pacquiao fights. You know, it's just he's got so much history, you know. He's a Hall of Famer, you know.
Right.
And Danny Garcia, I mean, a lot of people rag on him, but I think he's special, you know what I mean? He does everything well. And he's like a guy who doesn't really get that much talk about, and I want to see him live too, you know. And if he's not fighting Morales on Saturday, it's not like they're going to say, bring some guy from the undercard and he's going to fight him in the main event. You know, that's too big a risk.
That's true. I mean, I guess they could roll, you know, Pablo Cano up there. But, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? So, I mean, they're kind of – I understand the inherent problem with the guy that tests positive right before the main event. And you're like, well – I think that's why Angel Garcia was so mad at the press conference today.
Mm-hmm.
And he was yelling and saying, you know what the fuck it is. I think what he was referring to is probably the. I mean, this is just my guess, you know. So Golden Boy, if you want to sue me, you know, be my guest. But I think they probably were made to take a deal or being kind of coerced into taking some sort of monetary deal to go with the fight. But I mean, if you're there live or on TV and Eric Morales is staging a late comeback, how do you not go? Well, you know, is it EPO? Then it becomes like, you know, a guessing game of what drug he's on, you know?
If it was a diuretic, would that actually even make him a better fighter, though?
If
it's something for him just to cut weight, you know what I mean? Would it make him a better fighter? Like, and if it's that case, part of me is like, yeah, just let him fight then. You know what I mean? Take something from his purse or something, but don't hurt the fans for it, you know? But if it was, like you said, an EPO or something that's going to give him a boost or whatever kind of drug that would do that, you know, then I'd say don't do the fight. But if it's a diuretic for something he's just got to lose weight for, then I don't know. Maybe am I crazy for thinking that they should have a fight, you know? I don't know.
That's a very good point, you know.
It is a good point, but at the same time, you know, these rules are made up for a reason, you know, and that goes into that gray area is if you let this thing slide – you know, now you're kind of playing with the other thing, you know. It's one of those. Either it's a flat out no or a flat out yes, you know. And I think that's the messed up part of our sport is that there's always decisions made on the fly. There's always words being able to be twisted and bent to accommodate fighters like Eric Morales or any of these fighters that have a household name that bring drawing power and stuff, you know, it sucks, man. But I think
if they let this go on, Chavez Jr. is going to need to smoke a blunt to calm down, you know, because mm-hmm. he got absolutely vilified. And here we are. We don't even know what the drug is. I mean, this is kind of worse than, you know, like I've had a problem with the UFC where a guy finishes, and I'm told by somebody very much in the know that I think there's only like six guys that are listed or eight guys that are listed as having 2Es for testosterone in the UFC. I'm told the number is closer to 20. So,
right.
But we just don't know about it.
You mean for TRT?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So the guys, you know, legally do it, but you know, after the fight, they'll say, "Oh, that guy was on TRT." Like Keith Kaiser will let people know. I'm told it's closer to 20. We just haven't hit them all. They haven't all gone public. I have a big problem with that, but I mean, this is worse. this guy tested positive for something on the banned list. Obviously, he doesn't have a 2E for it, you know, a therapeutic use exemption. And they're talking about doing it. They're going to do it. I mean, regardless, this fight's going to happen.
You think so? I mean, it's still you still got tomorrow. Even with a I'm caught up in between, you know. I don't know.
Well, I also kind of want to know, I mean, Boxing Scene's reporting this.
Hey, really quick, I just want to announce the publicist for Robert the Ghost Guerrero just told me that he wants to come on at 6:30 to talk about his fight with Berto.
Awesome. All right. Well, we will do that. Hopefully he was not listening and getting angry at what I was saying. hopefully he was, and that's why he's coming on. But in any case, I'm excited that Robert's coming on. Shoot, I forgot what I was saying. Well, I mean, if this fight, I think this fight without question goes on. I mean, I know Hailstorm Sports broke it. Everybody else is starting to pick it up. Fight Hype, quote unquote, confirmed it. But people are running with it, and Schaefer's given his statement now to his press agent. So, I don't think the media pressure is going to do anything. I mean, my media pressure didn't do anything. It got me banned. That's what I want to know. Since everybody's being so open and talking about it, why am I banned?
Right.
They're kind of talking about doing what I was reporting, right?
Like Gabe, I read your stuff all the time, and I remember that article you were talking about. When you were talking about how USADA and like you asked the question, if someone was to be found guilty, would the fight still go on or whatever? And now we're kind of seeing that. Yeah, he's found guilty, and the fight might go on. So maybe, you know, you're getting your answer now. You know.
Yeah, that's. Can I have my credentials back? I was actually just doing my job. Do you know
you can't. No, you can't.
but can't they let the New York State Athletic Commission, they're kind of strict, you know. I mean, look at what they did with Margarito. They almost didn't let the Margarito fight go through with Cotto. You know, like how can – if they're going to let Margarito almost not fight, how are they going to let Morales fight, you know? I don't think the fight's going to happen, in my opinion. If he's taken the EPO or some, or like a TRT or something like that, I don't think the fight should happen. If it's a diuretic or if it's pot or if it's like cocaine or something like a recreational drug or something like that, something that's not going to help his performance, then I think the fight should happen, you know. But I don't know.
Well, we're going to have Scott just texted me. He wants to come on at 6:15. So we'll do a quick interview breaking it down with him and kind of get all the how it all went down. I mean, I talked to him today, and he seems to know exactly what's going on, and he doesn't know what drug. I don't think we'll find out. You know, we're gonna have a lot of questions, but that's really the $1 million question. What's the drug
exactly? You know,
why is it acceptable? You know,
absolutely. Mike, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm gonna put you back on hold. Don't hang up.
Thanks,
no
Mike.
Problem, guys. Have a good one. Thanks, everyone.
Enjoy the fights, and Paulie too.
Yeah, exactly. Fight fans, call in 347-215-7598. Robert the Ghost Guerrero is going to be on shortly with us here on Leaving Ring at 6:30. Then right after that, we're going to have Andre Berto call in about 7 o'clock and talk to us about their upcoming fight, their match that's going to be in Anaheim. Anaheim, right, the Honda Center. So call in and let's talk some boxing here. 347-215-7598 with myself, Dave Duenas, and Mr. Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Let's get a Gino, who wants to talk, Angel Hernandez and Eric Morales. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and Leaving the Ring. Gino, are you there, brother? Gino, no? 951? Gino. I hear him in the background and stuff. Wants to talk Eric Morales.
Maybe he pocket dialed us.
Strong possibility. I'll put him back on hold and see. Maybe we'll try him a little later here on Leaving
Scott's
the Ring.
Scott's going to call in about 2 minutes, he just said, because I told him to call a little sooner because of the late addition of Robert the Ghost Guerrero. So he's going to do that.
Absolutely, man. You know, and I'm curious, too, before I make any judgment or thoughts on all that, I'd like to hear what Scott has to say about this breaking news about Eric Morales and stuff. And like I said, you know, I applaud young journalists that go for it. You know, they grab it by the throat and they don't let go, and they stick to being what it is that you're supposed to do as a journalist, and that's seek for the truth, speak about the truth, and reveal the truth.
Yeah, I'm really that's our job, is to report on things in the public interest. You know, that's what he's doing, and Well, I'll let him tell the story because it is very interesting how it all went down. It's kind of funny talking to another reporter who's going through the whole breaking a PED story. I'm like, yeah, better you than me right now, you know. I'm trying to keep a low profile here, and he's kind of dealing with the same stuff that I was. He has people like yelling at him in Spanish on Twitter, the works, you know. I'm like, yeah, welcome to my world, pal.
Just tweet back, see? No, no, see. Yeah. Anyways, even though we're, you know, I mean, as of what I'm hearing right now being reported, you know, from Richard Schaefer, is what I'm hearing is that the fight is going to continue. It is going to go on. But it's, you know, it is Thursday and things can change in a matter of 24 hours or 48 hours in this fight here.
How much do you hold out for?
God. Good question. I don't know. I really don't. You know, I mean, with the last caller, Mike, talking about, is there a possibility? I mean, what if he does kill Danny Garcia? First off, we don't know what's in the system. But secondly, too, let's just take the word kill. Let's talk about just damage. You know, here's a young champion that's given the rematch because it was in their claws. And as going in there, regardless of whatever, these guys are always risking their lives. But just to hear that somebody else may be on a banned substance or enhancement to try to get an edge, you know, I mean, it just makes you wonder, you know, if this guy fought in fair, you know, equal ground, there's a strong possibility he's not going to come out of the ring the same. But he's not fighting, you know, equal ground here, you know. So there is now a much more added percentage of him coming out of there not the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I guess it really depends. Like he said, that, you know, the million-dollar question is the drug. What drug did he take? You know, and if it's testosterone, I'm thinking, you know, at least $500,000. You know,
right?
Because you know, and you know, kind of what to expect. If it's EPO, you know, same thing. You know, it's got to be at least. I think my starting point is $500,000 to go through with it. Especially if I'm clean. You know, and I'm sitting there going like, well, I passed all the tests, and what was the point of doing the drug test beforehand? If ultimately, if a guy tests positive beforehand, you're just gonna decide which drug is cool and which one's not. Now we're entering into a thing where promoters are becoming their own commissions, complete with their own drug testing program, where they can decide this drug is okay, this drug is not. How much money does it take to make this go away, and we go through with the fight? And then we'll hand over the results to the commission and let them do their justice with the guy. But we're an in-house deal here. We want to know what drugs our guys are on. But at the same time, you know, do you really think Danny Garcia is there even an option of not doing the fight? I would guess no. You know? I mean, can you imagine what that room is like, what those conversations are going?
You know, I mean, and you raise the question, how much does Danny Garcia overlook a positive test and fight anyways? I'm going to tell you, it's going to be a very large sum. Let's not forget, Heyman is part of that team. So the negotiations of letting this fight happen for a big sum, for them to overlook it and continue on, it's going to be well, well received.
Scott's saying that he's online, David. I don't know if you've got him, but he's called in.
Okay, let me there we go. I got him. It's Hey Scott, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. How you doing, brother?
Hello there, I appreciate it. What's going on?
Good, man. Hey, thanks for taking the time and speaking to us here live on Leaving the Ring, bro. Hey, congratulations first off. I was just saying this a little while ago that I applaud, you know, young journalists that grab it by the throat. Don't let go, and do exactly what you're supposed to do, which is report the truth, stay on it, reveal it, no matter what, not be intimidated, and just go for it, man. So, hey, man, kudos for you, brother.
Hey, I appreciate it, and thanks, most of all, for calling me young, and I appreciate that.
So let's get down to it. How did this all come about? You know, I mean, the floor is yours. Tell us the story.
All right. Well, I mean, I would love to say that, you know, I've been working on this for weeks and months at a time, but, you know, literally fell into my lap. I found out this morning. I was like, wow, that's very, very interesting. I didn't do anything with it because, I mean, I'd only heard from one source. He is a good friend, but at the same time, it is just one source. So and after that, I went about my day, and then I noticed that there was a press conference, and nothing was stated. You know, the fight was still on. I was like, okay, and that's interesting. So then after that, I made a few phone calls, did a little bit of homework, and I got it confirmed from a second source who I trust as much as a friend more than anything, but his closeness to the matter is phenomenal. And then I had a third source actually give me a call. And so when that person gave me a call, none of the three people have ever met. And the fact that they all had the same story, I was like, okay, this has to be true. The only
right.
disturbing thing was I didn't know what he tested positive for. So I got on the horn with my guys, Calix and D-Style. We, you know, contacted the New York State Athletic Commission, got online, looked everywhere we could, contacted USADA. We either got no comment or no answer at all. And really, I was going back and forth on it because I was like, do we run the story if we don't know what it was? But it reached a point where we had three sources, like I said, who had never met. All three I am completely confident in. So, boom, we just ran with the story.
You know, going through that whole process, man, I got to ask you, what was going through your mind, really? I mean, how, you know, when you want to run a story like that, you know, obviously there's got to be some nerves behind that where you're thinking, you know, we could really F up and
yeah.
mess up our name, or, you know, or is this just a good interception and we might reach the goal?
You know, really what it is first and foremost, I'm a fan. So I'm a Morales fan, and I would never want to disrespect him or his legacy. I mean, this is a legendary fighter. So, like I said, one source, you're like, okay, you know, maybe that's cool, whatever, but I'm not going to do anything with it. But second source, so I feel extremely strong. I cannot stress that enough, extremely strong. Like I was saying to Gabe, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's a 9.99. And then a third source contacted me who, like I said, is completely unrelated to the first two. I was completely confident. The only thing, really, I was completely mystified was how is the fight going on still. And so, like I said, we double checked on the internet. We didn't see a blip about anything, you know, on Twitter, the Facebook, and every site you can mention. No one had mentioned it, and the fight was still going on. I go, this is crazy. To me, that's as much a part of the story, man, as anything else. And so we just said, boom, then we got to do it.
Let me ask you this. If you hadn't caught the story and taking into the account your three sources, would it have been reported, do you think? Do you think it would have leaked?
You know what? I know two of the sources never would have leaked. And I know that for a fact because one of the sources was completely shocked that I knew. Not shocked like, oh, man, it's out. He's shocked like, how in the hell do you know
did
that?
Did you know?
And,
right.
Right. So, I mean, I have to say no. Because, I mean, because obviously, I mean, we all know how it goes. I mean, there's a ton of invested time, money. I mean, it's a huge event. You know, the first fight in Brooklyn in, what, 75 years, brand new arena. We all
right.
know that. So one would have to imagine that since they didn't announce anything at the presser that the story never would have leaked. But I do find it ironic, and Gabe's obviously been through this, how people have these unnamed sources, but they basically run the exact same story you have. And I'm like, that's interesting. Your sources in New York just happen to live in Scottsdale, Arizona. But, I mean, it is what it is.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it begs a lot of questions. One, is my ban going to get lifted? Because
or did your ban just get company? So.
Right.
Yeah, there's always room.
Well, you know, hey, hailstorms and the dark cloud, it fits. It, you know, fits your head and glove here, man.
So you go, hey, you know what? I just thought of a brand new logo right now. I'm going to do the logo. It's going to be Storm, Dark Cloud, and it's going to be me and Gabe throwing fight parties.
Yeah, I'm just going to go across the country. Every time there's a Golden Boy fight, we're definitely going to be available.
And you guys are going to carry a bowl full of a banned substance stuff in there. So
exactly. There you go. So, I mean, I mean, it's one of those things, too. I mean, you guys know. I mean, it's fascinating how you just put something out on Twitter, and then, you know, half the people think you're an idiot. I mean, because we're a smaller site, and I understand that. And I mean, look, I'm a huge Tommy Hearns fan. Grew up on the guy. So if someone told me something bad about Tommy Hearns, I would naturally defend Tommy. You know, I'm, oh, no, that's not true. But, I mean, it's just funny how I'm like, why would I do that to get recognition just to be wrong? You know what I mean? I mean, that makes no sense. So that's why we triple
because some
everything.
Sites, I mean, let's be honest here, some sites have done that, you know?
True.
And it's one of those things where people don't believe. You said the key word there. I'm a small site. You know, Leaving the Ring, it's been around for some time. We're a small site. We've broken some stories. And guess what? If you're not a big site, you know, we're all, in other words, if you don't got 8,000, 10,000, 12,000, you know, tweet followers, then unfortunately your word is not, it's not valid. You know what I mean? And I'm seeing guys right now that you know, I don't know if they broke it before you. But right now, what I'm knowing, and I always trust what my guys tell me is, you broke the story. And I'm like, cool, he broke the story. But I see other people, they take credit for it, and it's just one of those things, you know. But you know what, man? I've always loved to see the hardworking guy, the smaller guy, break it, and I'm going to embrace that because, trust me, and know exactly where you guys are coming from and stuff. You look at it and go, this can break me or this can make me.
There's nothing
scarier. Without a doubt. Oh, no.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I'm on the phone with Calix and D-Style, and we're going back and forth, and then I get the third final phone call. So I was like, guys, give you a buzz right back. Get off the phone, call him back like, hey, we got to do it. And it's funny because so many people were taking shots at Calix. One site actually said he fabricated it because he didn't like the card, because he had basically tweeted out he didn't like the card. And so one site took the article in his tweets and basically put that together and said he made this up because he didn't like the card. I'm like, how ludicrous. I mean, it's funny. I mean, the Internet's beautiful, but at the same time, it's insane. So I it's one of those things. I don't take anything personal at all. I mean, and outside of maybe mom jokes, because growing up where I'm from, mom jokes do not fly. But
yeah.
I do take it personal that, you know, Calix and D-Style are full-time jobs, and these guys are doing this, and on the side, hustling, triple, checking everything, and if someone's going to steal the story. That actually bothers me. So, I mean, it is what it is.
I don't like that, yeah, the attribution thing. I don't know. Have you seen who's – you're not the kind of guy to sit there and name who's ripped you off, but I am. When I saw Fight Hype put it up, and they just said, like, you know, confirmed sources, you know, or unnamed sources from New York, and maybe they've got them, maybe they don't. But I just thought, how shitty is that? You don't really add anything, and people are kind of saying they confirm it, and well, I think D-Style was being ironic. It just doesn't make any sense to me. You look at it and you go, you got to give attribution to the guy who broke it. You just do. It's only fair. And even, like, I still acknowledge the fact, like, Ron Lewis was ahead of me on one of the drug stories. Scott mm-hmm. Schaefer from Boxing Scene was ahead of me. I got a lot of credit for those. I think people wanted me to break those, but I really didn't. But you really, this is your story, and it's not fair. So where does it go from here? Do you think you can find out what that substance is? Or
you know what? Actually, I'm actually working on that now. And I have someone in New York. Obviously won't remain nameless, but I'm trying to find that out now. And the thing that is funny is if you confirm something, usually you would add something on to it. So, for instance, if you would confirm the story, they would probably confirm what the substance was, right? You know, like you
right.
would say.
Right. Oh, that's how it's done.
Right. I mean,
but
so
to go, I can confirm with ghosts that there is an afterlife.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it is
what it is. But, yeah, but at this point, we're obviously not finished. We're still trying to get to the bottom of it. One thing I will say, though, is I've gotten some hilarious tweets, some in Spanish, which I can only figure out some of the words, some good, some bad. To me, it's Twitter. I laugh at all of it, but for the people that didn't insult me and call me disparaging names, I don't need an apology, but I would at least, like, you next time, whether, you know, Gabe, it's you, Steve, whoever it is, break the story, at least wait maybe an hour or so, you know, maybe 90 minutes, at least wait. You don't have to start cussing at people right away. I mean, at least wait, give it some time.
It ain't
going to
happen.
Comes up.
It's not going to happen, man. We till this day, we still get. Yeah, we can hope. We all want to hope and we all want to say, hey, man, we're just talking boxes. Nothing personal, but unfortunately, that's just not the way the world goes.
It's not the way it goes.
No.
Yeah.
Hey, one thing Gable. I want to add, though, real fast, though, because I've always got to get on the show, is Gabe, your former nemesis who backed out of your fight, apparently he was taking shots at us. So I'm thinking maybe if he backs out of your fight, maybe he went back out of mine. But, you know, man, that's wishful
thinking. That's wishful thinking.
Well, if you throw in a brand new pair of shoes, he might. That's a different story, though.
That's classic. That's classic.
Yeah, that's kind of a boxing inside joke. We'll just share that. I actually did share it with Scott, so he's exactly
that's
what
good.
We're talking about.
That's good.
I'll actually text you something in a little bit. But thank you so much for calling in, Scott. We're going to have Robert Guerrero here on in a second, but keep us surprised, man. Congratulations. That rave, like we talked about earlier, it is kind of an unbelievable thing when you break a story and the world kind of becomes split about who you are. But somebody else hit me up about it today and was like, who's this site? And I said, these are the guys. This is the reason that I ended up contacting Alfredo Angulo. You know, he recommended me for that, and he's the guy that did the first interview with Angulo. So to me, your credentials speak for themselves. You don't catch them always, but you're one of those guys that's plugged in, and I think today proves that.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to speak to Scott, man. So it's a real pleasure to finally speak to you, brother. You know, so hopefully we can continue talking and hopefully work in the future.
Yes, sir.
All right, man. You take
care.
All right, man.
Peace.
Scott Hale from Hale Sports breaking the Eric Morales story. Give him some credit. Give him the credit, man. Jesus.
Give him the love.
You know what I mean? I mean, it really irks me when you see that a guy puts in the work, and he said it right. You know, he's got guys that have a full-time job. You know, we all have the guys out there, we have a full-time job, and then we break something or we get on top of something, we do something for the very first time, and because you're not, you know, super well-known, you shouldn't get the credit. You know, that's just BS, man. Seriously, it is, you know. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys put in the work, they put in the time, and they're trying to do the best they can for the sport. Appreciate them. Don't neglect them. We should be having.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. I couldn't agree with you more. I was just, it's interesting. I'm checking Twitter because we're pretty active tonight, just because we've got Scott and we've got Berto coming up here and Robert Guerrero now. It's kind of an interesting night. But one guy tweeted at me and said he'd be upset, you know, if Eric Morales tested positive. He's a hero of mine. And his avatar is a picture of Keith Moon smoking a cigarette, the former, you know, dead drummer for The Who, one of the great drug addicts of all time. And it makes you kind of think, you know, and I had a chance to spend time with Victor Conte when he was in town for the Donaire fight, and I was watching his interview. I don't know if you had a chance to see it. It's an epic interview on the Joe Rogan show last night. It was 3 hours of them just going back and forth talking about drugs and the history of doping and cover-ups and all that stuff. It's so topical how it all kind of happens in a wave like this around each other. But it brings up the question, you know, do you legalize it? Or do you find some way to – I mean, I guess TRT is kind of legalizing it, but it's something we always go back to on the show, and it is kind of funny. It's like somebody saying, oh, that'd be terrible if this kind of hero, this sports figure of mine, was on drugs, while one of his other heroes is one of the great drug addicts of all time.
Right.
We have to kind of examine that. And like we were saying earlier with the caller, you know, what's a good drug? What's a bad drug? What's acceptable?
Exactly. We got to regulate them and stuff. But really quick, let's get our next guest here with us. I believe we got Robert the Ghost Guerrero. Are you there, brother? Robert, are you with us? No, I thought it was Robert with us, with somebody else. I agree with you. You know, I mean, you know, that's, I think the wording of how they, wait a minute, it is, hold on. Robert, are you with us, brother?
Yeah, I'm right here. How's it going?
Hey, what's good, man? How you doing?
Doing all right. Just
so
back in camp, making it happen.
I was about to say that. I heard you're back in camp, and, hey, really excited about this fight. I think this is a great, tremendous fight, even though I really wanted to see the Timothy Bradley fight, but Berto is a tough, tough,
tough fighter. You know, a lot of the eyes of writers right now and even fans, a major, major step up with Andre Berto. Let me ask you, hearing, getting this fight and automatically jumping into camp, what is the process for yourself? You know, what is the thought? Because originally I heard the mind frame was you guys were going to get Bradley. That fell apart. Does that change everything that was originally being prepared for camp?
Nah, not at all. You know, I prepare the way I'm going to prepare. You know, I like to work on what I like to work on and what I'm going to do in the ring, not what the guy's going to do. You know, we just got to do some film study on Berto, but, you know, pretty much we got everything packed down. You know, unfortunately, the fight didn't happen with Bradley. You know, I wanted that fight too. You know, him coming off that fight with Pacquiao and, you know, being on top right now, hey, I wanted to dethrone the guy. But, you know, we're going with Andre Berto, and now we're going to see what he's about. Now that, you know, he's not on the sauce, we're going to see what he's about now, really.
Robert, really quick, when I heard that the fight's going to be over there in Southern California, I was a little bit kind of, I guess there was two things, two emotions. I was disappointed and I was puzzled. Because me and Gabriel were talking about this a little earlier on the show, and like Gabriel mentioned, it really didn't make any sense. You're the draw. You would bring out tons of folks in the Bay Area. You've done it. I don't know how many times. Why are you being treated that you're like you're not the draw in this fight?
I don't know. It doesn't matter to me whether two people are watching or millions are watching. I'm coming to fight, and that's all I'm about. You know, I wanted it to be, you know, up north in Northern California where I'm from. You know, you're absolutely right. The draw would be there. It would be crazy. But,
it'd be phenomenal.
You know, they wanted to do it right there in you know, down south towards Los Angeles. So, you know, whatever. You know, the one thing that I am very happy is, you know, they're doing all the drug testing, all that's going to go through. And, you know, we're doing that OSADA. We're doing also, you know, California. They assured me that they're going to step their game up on their drug testing. And, you know, they're working with UCLA. They're doing a tremendous job. So, you know, that makes me very happy. And, you know, it equals the playing field. So now that's why I said we're going to see what Berto's really about.
I'm curious about that. I'm glad you brought up California and their situations too with the drug testing. They recently had some kind of snafus that were public. I don't know if you were aware of that. Is that why you? I know you initially wanted VADA. I'm just curious. You know, I'm all for the extra additional tests in general. Why was it that you were so adamant? Was it because he tested positive, or are you just looking around the sport and going, "What's going on here?"
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, looking around the sport, looking at all sports. And then, you know, also being in with the guy that's been on steroids, you know, it's cheating, man. You're on drugs. You should be honest. Get in the ring. Use your natural God-given abilities. Not have to get sauced up and enhance yourself to fight. You know, you're either going to do it all natural or not.
You think it's just part of the culture with athletes that, you know, because of the damage, and a lot of it is about recovery, and sometimes it's not just about enhancement, but, or it's like with the testosterone, it's like prolonging your career, you know, where guys would end earlier. I mean, what's your thoughts in general? Should you guys just be all natural, and or is there a line for you? You know, what's a supplement and what's on the other side of the supplement line?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're taking testosterone to enhance yourself. Hey, that's still, you know, cheating. You know, you should come in all natural the way you are.
Right.
Besides that, it doesn't matter because when I get in that ring fight night, November 24th, I'm taking care of business no matter what. So I'm ready to go no matter what. So it doesn't matter if the guy enhances or not. You know, I'm just happy that it equals the playing field. You know, California's stepping their game up. They're going to do their thing. They assured me that. So, you know, now it's about getting to work, taking care of business, and, you know, getting prepared.
Do you consider that they, because you initially asked for VADA, I guess that's what ESPN reported, and everybody decided, Golden Boy and Heyman basically decided to go with USADA. Did that matter to you? Was it just like, all right, I need my big fight. If this is the cog that I got to move in order to do this, then so be it, as long as everything's on the up and up with the testing?
Yeah, we requested the VADA testing, but, you know, they wanted to do the USADA, you know, whatever. Whatever, like I said, you know, California assured me that, you know, they're going to step their game up on the drug testing and, you know, like I said, they're working with UCLA labs, and they're doing a tremendous job. And so, you know, that's what I'm happy about. And, you know, but you know, besides that, at the end of the day, I'm going to take care of business.
Right.
Fair enough. Yeah, and it's, you know, I don't want to belabor the point. It is kind of interesting to me that they had a choice, because all three of them, the CSAC, USADA, and VADA, all used the UCLA medical lab. So I don't see the difference. I mean, I do see other differences. But looking at the fight, you had Bradley on the table, and for whatever reason, that didn't happen. And then you went to Berto. Did you consider, and do you think of this way when you look at fights, who's more dangerous or who's more lucrative? How do you look at when you're thinking about opponents? Particularly at this stage, because you're fighting the best of the best now. You're doing the big fights.
You know, I look at everybody as a dangerous opponent. You just got to be 100% prepared. Anybody could be dangerous. You got two hands. You can punch. You can be dangerous. You know, so you got to prepare for everybody the right way, and that's what I do. Is I prepare for everybody the way I'm supposed to prepare. So no matter who gets in front of me, you know, I'm coming to fight.
What do you think?
So, I'm like I said, I'm looking for the best fights out there, and you know, we got the fight with Berto. Unfortunately, the fight didn't go through with Bradley. I would love that fight, but you know, the decision was to go with Berto. So you know, we're gonna take care of business with Berto.
What do you think is the most challenging, Robert, with Berto? Is it? I mean, he's a good puncher. He's got really fast hand. But in your point of view of what you've seen of him, what do you think is the challenge that you feel that you have to kind of overcome?
Nothing really. You know, you just got to be prepared. You got to be prepared for everybody on all aspects. So, like I said, you know, anybody's dangerous. Anybody can punch. You know, going into the ring, you got to be prepared in all different aspects. You got to be ready to bang. You got to be ready to box. You got to be ready to do it all in the ring. You got to be able to change gears. And, you know, that's the way I'm going to come. I'm going to come ready to change gears when I have to. So, you know, that's what I'm doing. I'm preparing for everything.
You know, when I was down at your fight in San Jose, which was a great event, man, it was a great turnout, especially for the Bay Area folks, brother. And I saw Andre Berto there. And the following week, you know, we came on the air and we talked about your fight. And I said, you know, I honestly thought that Berto was there scouting you. And it looked like that seems to be a bit of the case, even though Brad's name was brought up. To you, getting this fight here, is this now your chance of looking at, okay, this is my big fight, but it's really the big fight for the opening of other big fights out there for yourself?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, every fight's like that. Every fight you take, every time you get in that ring, you know, you're only as good as your last fight, so you got to step it up. You got to beat the next guy that's in front of you. You know how rough this sport is. You know, one bad thing happens, and you fall away to the bottom of the barrel. That's the way it is in boxing. It's not like basketball or baseball where, you know, you got a game the next day.
Right. So. No, absolutely.
I got to throw you just absolute respect, Robert, for, you know, this is as tough a first defense as I can think of, you know.
Right.
But in looking at it, you know, Berto, with his history with southpaws, he doesn't really have a good one. Did that enter into your mind at all? Like, you know, you've got to not only – like on paper, I think he's the bigger guy, the stronger guy. He might be more explosive, but you have the better boxing skills and you have the more difficult style, and you've got a pedigree, you know, a multi-division champion. But the lefty thing, is that something that you went, you know what, he's going to have trouble with me? Or do you just think everybody's going to have trouble with you because you're as good as you are?
Oh, yeah, everybody's going to have trouble. You know, being able to do different things in the ring, it gives everybody trouble. Not knowing how I'm going to come. You know, Berto hasn't fought a lefty as good as me. You know, the best lefty he's fought was Victor Ortiz. Victor Ortiz is a one-dimensional lefty.
Right.
Who's stiff, has horrible footwork, and just comes straight in, jumping in. And he gave him everything he can handle. He looked like he wanted to quit that fight.
So I'm thinking of, like, Luis Collazo, who's also a southpaw, gave him trouble. That's kind of more closer to your style. You know, although you seem to want to be more of a puncher, you have a more aggressive mentality than Collazo. And moving up in weight, I mean, we haven't really talked since your Soko Gaden fight.
You know what that is? It's not just being aggressive. It's I love fighting. I love to fight. I love to get in the ring. I love to mix it up. People are like, oh, I love knocking guys out. No, I like to go 12 rounds. I like to put a punishment on guys. That's what I'm about. That's what this sport's about, is hurting. I like to hurt guys all the way through 12 rounds. They leave that fight, they're beat up. They're beat up to the body, to the head. Hey, that's what I'm going to do.
That actually, yeah, kind of, you kind of answered my question. Has your mentality changed since you moved up from 135 to 147? It seemed like you were same guy, I think you were more of a volume puncher and more aggressive, kind of pushing him back and making your statement in the fight. How did you feel in that first 147 fight, and do you think you're going to change as you move along?
Oh, I felt great at 147. You know, I think that was the perfect fight to get in. You know, one of the guys like Berto or anybody didn't want to fight, who they ducked for the past couple of years. So, you know, that's why I brought the guy in. I want to fight the guy that nobody wants to fight, the guy that they're going to sidestep. That's why we brought in Nadine. You know, he was the mandatory. Nobody wanted to fight him. You know, we're going to take the gamble. We're going to fight the tough guys. So that's what we did. We brought Nadine, who's a big puncher, who's a very strong guy, and who's determined, a guy that hasn't lost, a guy that wants to win.
You know, that was a great fight for you. I thought it was a great step up at 147 to see where you're exactly where you're at. But even that being said, Robert, do you think you finally now kind of fit into that? Because even with that fight there, I honestly got to tell you, I thought there was a little bit of shaky grounds, you know what I mean? I didn't know whether or not you were fully 147-pounder, you know? And now you've got that fight over with. You obviously have to train as a 147-pounder. Do you feel like a more natural 147-pound guy?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You got to consider the fact that I just came off of shoulder surgery.
Right.
And that I was off for a year and a half. So, you know, the ring rust is there, you know, a little sketchy on the shoulder for that fight. And, you know, I got to get in the ring and go full force, balls to the wall with that guy. Now I know my shoulder's great. Now it's going to work.
Even seeing you after the fight, when I got to see you, you know, at the hotel, you know, I don't know why, but normally – after a fight, and tell me if I'm wrong, after I've seen you at a fight, you always seem very relaxed, happy. With this one, it just kind of seemed that you were not completely satisfied. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, you're a bit right. I was very satisfied. You know, I wanted to do a lot more stuff in the ring that I wanted to do. But, you know, that being said, you know, you have a lot of ring rust. You got to shake that off. Now I shook that off. Now it's time to move on, take care of business. You know, there was a lot of things in the ring that I wanted to do. I was a little tense in the ring, and that has to do with not being in there for so long.
Right.
You know, everybody says, it's like riding a bike. Once you've rode a bike, you can ride it all the time. But if you ever rode a bike in a couple of years and you get on it, you're going to be a bit shaky until you get the hang of it.
And that's what I meant. You know, when I saw you, you've always been more friendlier. You've always been more happier about your win. To me, I had that sense that you weren't satisfied, and to me, I felt like you had that look like this was not your best performance. You did it, but this was not the stellar performance you were looking for.
No, I wanted to punish him more. I wanted to make a big statement. I wanted to put a beating on him, a beating on him. To let everybody know in the boxing world that I ain't playing games. And, you know, I came a bit short on that. You know, I won the fight, took care of business. I did what I had to do. Put out a good fight. Came and did what I did, dominated the fight, won it. But it wasn't still what I wanted to do.
Right.
This is probably the least laid back I've ever heard you.
Yeah.
I can always kind of hear your smile through the phone, but you're not playing. You're not smiling this time around. You got a sense that you here you are. You moved to 147. You did what you said. You moved yourself into position for Mayweather as a mandatory. You got a belt and you beat a credible guy. And yet, where's the love? Is that kind of where you're at? Like you're not defending at home. You're going to go to Ontario. There's plenty of Mexicans there, and people are going to go. And it's a good fight venue, but you don't get to defend at home. There seems to be a little bit of a chip on your shoulder still. Is that correct?
What really gets me is just, you know, when you get into the mandatory spots, and I've been into a lot of mandatory spots,
Sure.
And every time it seems that I get ducked. I get sidestepped.
Right.
And, you know, you just got to keep taking care of business. Keep on trucking. Keep on trucking through, man, until it gets better. And that's what I'm doing. And, I've been nice for too long. I've been nice for too long. And you know, people don't take you that serious when you're nice. As soon as I started speaking up, hey, let's make these fights. It's time to get it done. You know, I've been a mandatory for this long. You know, nobody wants to fight, and everybody starts tripping. Oh, whoa, Guerrero just wants to cash out. He needs a big payday. Nah, man. I'm tired of sitting back and waiting, man. It's time to take care of business.
Right.
Yeah.
I want these guys when they're at their best. I don't want these guys when they're old and they're about to retire.
Right.
So when I do beat him, oh, he was just an old man. He was already out the door. He was already past his prime. Now I want these guys at their best.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, why is he like we're going to see Pacquiao Mayweather at some point, but they're going to be old as hell. And
right.
It's going to be – they might as well call the fight just, you know, like the retirement fund, because that's what it's going to be. I do want to see guys when they're closer to their prime. I really wanted to see you and Bradley. I got to be honest.
I did too.
I'm
not
crazy
big time.
About this.
I wanted to get in with Bradley myself.
Yeah, I thought that was a better matchup for you. I thought it was an incredibly winnable fight for you. I would have picked you going away. With this, I mean, Berto's a little bit bigger, stronger, although, you know, I said the same thing about Rios and Alvarado when I was dead wrong, so what the hell do I know? But I'm really excited for you, man. This is going to be a good fight.
That's what everybody said about me and Aideen also, too.
It's true. You're not a 47. You're going to get blown out.
I went up two weight classes.
Right. Yep.
What do you think about the Floyd thing? I mean, they're there on the front lines. I've even heard that he's not thinking about fighting again. I mean, was it ever even a possibility in there because you were the mandatory, or did the WBC just not even broach it? How did that go down?
I have no idea. Who knows, man? Maybe it is because I'm in the mandatory spot. Who knows?
That's true. Like, you are the mandatory man. Like, a lot of your belts are interim belts because you move in the position and the guy's like, ah, hell no. And they move on. I guess, yeah, I can understand your frustration. Well, here's a chance to take on a marquee guy and take him out. I mean, do you think it's got to be emphatic? Or do you think this is a 50-50 in terms of the judges will be on your side with it?
Oh, I'm not worried about the judges. I'm going to beat him down. I'm going to beat this dude down. And like I said, if I don't knock him out, it's even better because I'm going to beat him down for 12 rounds.
Nice.
And he better be ready for those 12 rounds because I know he don't like going 12 rounds.
I can't wait for this fight, man. I really can't. You know, and I'm gonna be there, bro. I haven't missed one of your fights. I gotta be there for this one.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's enough games, bro. It's enough games. It's time to take care of business, man.
Exactly. No, I agree, man.
Who
and,
knows? Take care of business. This fight. Nobody's gonna care about that Mayweather Pacquiao fight.
We'll have to wait and see.
people are going to want to see me fight them.
Well, I hope so. Well, you know, and you look at Floyd's options. It was kind of interesting because I was one of those guys that was like, you know, I just don't see it because you were at 35. I didn't know what you were like at 47. And I still, you know, I got to be honest, I'm not completely sold that you could take out a guy the size of Floyd because I think he's now at 54. But when everything kind of came around and Floyd came out of jail and Manny decided who he was going to fight,
on,
everything
man.
Was moving.
I took out one of the guys, one of the strongest guys at 47 that nobody wanted to fight.
That is true. Nobody wanted any part
come
of
on.
Soul Cookie.
Come on, man. don't hate, bro. Congratulate. You should be pushing for the fight. Like, damn,
absolutely.
I want to see this guy, dude. Shit, he's bagging it out with the toughest dude in the division that nobody wants to fight. That's what I want
exactly.
to see. I want to see the guy that wants to fight.
Right.
I want to see the guy that wants to fight, not the guy that just wants to knock a guy out and that's it. I want to see the guy that wants to fight.
Yeah, like I said, I don't disagree, and I've always said that you know.
That's what makes boxing, man. The guys that are determined and the guys that want to make it happen, that want to do it, and I'm one of those guys. Credit ain't getting put there, man.
I agree.
That's the way it is. I mean, you look at Andre Ward, man. He don't get the credit he deserves. He's beating everybody.
That's true. You know, it is kind of a trip that we've got two champions in the Bay Area, and again, like, yeah, where's the love?
We got three.
Three? Donair. Oh, that's right. Yeah, and Donair. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we got three and stuff, you know. But, you know, going back with what you were talking about, Rob, about fighting the best, I got to tell you, I still want to see the Bradley fight, even though that Cold War, it's something there that we may never see some of these great fights, you know.
That's the frustrating thing.
Yeah.
He's going to sit out and wait for a big fight. Hey, we'll sit out. After this fight, I'll be right there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this fight with Berto is a great opportunity, because I think it's just going to open doors and make it a much bigger fight with Bradley or whoever else is out there that decides they want to step up to the plate, man. And all I could say is I can't wait for this fight. I think it's going to be explosive. I think it's going to tell a lot on both your guys' part and where you guys are both at 147, and who's going to be victorious. And whoever's victorious out of this, I could just see bigger and better things for you guys.
Yep. That's what it's about, man.
Well, Robert, thanks again, brother, for coming on, man. It's much appreciated. It's been long overdue. We haven't had you on for a minute.
Yep.
I really appreciate it, Robert, man. You got me all fired up, man. Now I want to see the fight. And, you know,
like I said, don't hate, congratulate.
I was just going to say, you know, you're a new champion in a new division. Not a lot of guys can say they've made the jump from featherweight to 47 and picked up titles. Congratulations.
Dude, I've won titles in probably like five or six fighters combined that are champions right now. Like,
right.
Like, yeah, where's the love?
Come on.
You know?
Yep.
All right. Well, I don't think there'll be any denying it. That this one, it's going to be an exciting fight. And for you to come out the winner, I don't think there'll be any denying you at that point. You know, at some point, the networks are going to turn around at that point, and everything's going to roll. All you got to do is get through that guy. And I can't wait to hear what he has to say. He's going to be on in 10 minutes.
It's not get through the guy. It's smash through the guy.
There you go.
Nice.
Like I said, I like to fight.
Yeah.
I love to fight. I've been doing it since I was a kid. And that's why I stuck with this, because I love it.
And let's just add that out there too, man. You're a barrier rider, brother. Come on.
Exactly. repping the bay.
That's it, man. Hey, Rob, again, brother. Hey, thanks a lot, man. Tell the family I said what's up, and I can't wait for your fight with Andre Berto. It's going to be explosive.
Yep. All right, man. You guys have a good night, all right?
All right, bro. Take care.
All right, God bless. Take care. Bye.
Take care.
Robert the Ghost Guerrero is going to be facing Andre Berto, man, just assured us right now. It's going to be explosive. I can't wait. You know, and I go back and talking about that fight, last fight with Adon, where after the fight, you could see it in his face. There was a sense of not satisfied just yet. I'm not just satisfied beating this tough guy and having this bout. There was much more. There's much more in the distance for me to cover. There's more ground for me to cover, and I got a lot more left in me. And you got to love a fighter like that. You know, I know sometimes we've been a little tough on Robert about the leap of weight and, you know, calling out the best in a division where he hasn't even, you know, decided to linger around in. But he's in it. He's in that mix now. So in order to stay in that mix, you got to fight the best that are in that ingredient. And that's what he's doing. And I got to applaud him on that one. And like you said, this is a very tough challenge for him, fighting a bigger, fast, hard-hitting Andre Berto as his first title defense and doing it on his grounds.
Yeah, it's... you know, I got to applaud him. I mean, it's not completely on his grounds, just because, you know, they're doing it in Ontario and he's
right.
Doing it with USADA instead of VADA, the things that he asked for. But at the same time, you know, what Robert's asking for, he's not asking for, you know, let's do it in my hometown. You know, he's not doing like, you know, I'll fight the toughest guy in the room completely 100% on my terms. You know, come down and wait or come to my hometown or any of that. What he's saying is, let me in the big fight. I will move up and wait. And I will do this if you let me. And they're letting him. and he's going for it. And he's just a brave guy. I mean, he has a lot of character. I mean, we know his story very well, but he's a guy that he should be celebrated. Like, don't hate. At least, at the very least, celebrate, you know?
It's almost like two guys, you know, sometimes. You know, we know his story about his life and his wife and all that. But at the same time, there's another story that he's almost creating, and that's the fighter story. You know, we know the family guy, the God-fearing guy, but at the same time, he's almost making a path of another personality out there, which is the ghost. You know, where Andre Ward's story has always circled around his family and his belief and his religion, where Robert does also comes from that same cloth. But he's, in a way, he's kind of separating himself and making himself be human, but at the same time, be fighter.
Yeah. I mean, it's, man, you know, he got me all fired up, dude. I really want to see the fight now.
I do,
you know,
too.
Before, I mean, especially, you know, size doesn't matter. If a guy's a better boxer, a guy's a better boxer. And I think Robert is smart enough that he will be able to figure out ways to do things. But, you know, we'll never know. I mean, until we see the fight. You know, in about 5 minutes here, we're going to hear from Andre Berto. And I'm going to come out of it probably feeling, you know, hearing his case might feel a little bit different. I still kind of lean towards Berto just being the more explosive guy. But it's an interesting fight, right? I mean,
it's an interesting fight. And honestly, I got to tell you, I have to really just go back with that last both of these guys fight because even though Berto was in the losing end, he was in a fighting losing end. He was almost in the Mike Alvarado type of losing end. You know, he fought his heart off. You know, there's no denying that he's not going to lay down and just give it to you. You have to take it from him. Guerrero's been in those type of tough fights too with cuts and broken shoulder and those. He's had a triumph in hard situations. So we got two guys in similar types of hearts, but definitely different types of styles. So I got to sit back and really think about this and really look at it because it's an interesting fight. Obviously, you have to look at – you got to weigh in the factor that Berto's a bigger guy. He's been in this division a lot longer. He's fought bigger guys, and he's got the quicker hands. But then you got to look at Roberts, and you mentioned it. His pedigree speaks for itself, and sometimes pedigree can go a long ways when moving up in weight and facing other guys that sometimes can be a little stuck in amateur mistakes. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598 here with myself, Dave Duenas, and David Chen. You there, Gabriel?
I am. I'm sorry. I was I muted myself. Just trying to keep up with our Twitter and all that. It's interesting, Dave, man. I'm just watching things. I know you don't pay attention to the UFC as much, and but I think I'd mentioned to you about Roy Nelson, who's a guy that's one of the coaches on The Ultimate Fighter, and Shane Carwin. They're trying to do VADA testing. I know Roy's entered the program, but Carwin is kind of claiming, similar to what happened with Floyd and Manny, that he's been kind of pushed into a situation where either he tests in the program, which is being offered free to him by VADA, or, you know, he looks like a bad guy, which, you know, I'm not really crazy about kind of maneuvering guys into those positions. It is a little jacked up. But at the same time, there's just kind of a war going on between Brett Brookhouse and, I believe, Jason Janae, the manager for Shane Carwin. But at the same time, we've got this Eric Morales story going on, which is kind of crazy. Everybody's claiming credit for that, so you're kind of watching the storm going around there. Scott's not getting quite the run that he should. It's just weird, man. Same problem. Months later, you know, running into this drug issue. It's something that we need to
address.
Yeah, we really do. We really do.
It's not going away.
Not such an emotional Richard Schaefer kind of way, but in like a rational adults talking kind of way. You know,
well, let's professional kind of way. You know, and I think that's what sometimes lacks in our sport is professionalism. Some people think that by putting on a suit and using big words sometimes, that means that translates as being professional. Not all the time.
Not all the time.
You know,
yeah.
And we have to address this. We got to look at this because this is not going to go away. It's just not going to go away. It's going to continue. And the more it does continue, the more it's going to get out of hand. And the more it gets out of hand, the much harder it's going to fix. Let's look at our government right now.
Yeah. Are you there?
I am still here.
Okay, I kind of went out for a second. We're waiting Berto, who's going to be calling in about 2 minutes. I think actually his publicist is going to call him in, and then they'll bring him on. Yeah, I just think it's, you know, across the board, we've got to address this issue. We've got to really open a dialogue and really figure out all these questions, because our sport is unique. So how are we going to handle a positive a few days before?
I'm just not sure that if people are ready to address this issue. I'm not sure people want to hear about this issue, because let's be honest here. We've addressed it. We've tackled it. We have tried to educate about it. And in a lot of ways, people try to shy away from it. They didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to talk about it. And they didn't want to be part in that mark, in that circle of trying to fix it. They wanted to stay out on those sidelines. They wanted to kind of see if the dust would settle. And guess what? We stood back. We allowed all the things that we had been talking about on Leaving Ring Fire, I don't know how long, to let that dust settle down. And guess what? It got kicked again. It's kicked up in the air again. You got another cloud of dust in this air that's polluting the sport.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's just unbelievable. And it's kind of crazy when these things happen, because I still am, you know, plugged in. And, you know, like my email and my phone are like starting to blow up, you know, while I'm sitting here. You know, people in the anti-doping community, they keep looking over at us. And I know there was for a while there, especially, you know, when all the stories were breaking initially, it was right before the Olympics. And I know that it had reached WADA, and it was before their committee, that we needed to start looking at boxing a little more. I don't know if it hit the committee, but it definitely hit higher-ups within that organization. There's another text. But the Olympics were coming, so they were like, we're gonna move on to something else. You know, we're gonna deal with the Olympics and that testing, and boxing is just gonna have to wait. But the way it's coming back around, and you look at Ali Adams and Larry O testing overseas, and the harsh penalties they've gotten, and the penalties we're not giving out, and then a fight might actually happen where a guy tested positive and people knew about it beforehand. That's going to be an ugly precedent that Golden Boy is going to forever have on their record as a contribution to boxing.
I want to throw this out there too, just really quick, you know, because we do get a lot of people that send us emails on our at our leavingandring@gmail.com, and somebody mentioned to me, he goes, you know, just like last time with your guys' show, the Peterson story was broken by yourself, Gabriel, and it really didn't alert folks. And then the other story comes out, and it was just massive. Isn't it ironic that just last guys had on Stephen Fader on the show talking about Antonio Tarver, and all of a sudden this kind of just kicks out, and again it's like right bust into our face and stuff. But before we even get into more than that, let's get in our next guest with us right now, Mr. Andre Berto himself. What's up, brother? How you doing? You're back on live with us.
Yeah, what's going on? It's been a while, man. What's happening?
It's been a minute, brother. You know, I saw you in San Jose, and it was good to see you mingling and hanging out and stuff. And now, see you in San Jose with the main guy that was holding the main event, Robert the Ghost Guerrero. Well, it turns out to be you guys are going to be mixing it up.
Yeah, man. I didn't know. I was just there you know, handle some things out there with the commission, and sat there and watched the fight. And, you know, it was like, you know, that's the one they want us to go with. So I said, hey, man, let's rock.
You know, we had on Robert not even a few minutes. I mean, like 5 minutes just a little while ago, and he just kept pushing the fact that he's going to smash you. Smash you for 12
that's
rounds.
Fine.
What do you think?
that's what they're supposed to say, man. I mean, at the end of the day, I didn't see him smash anybody at 135. So him coming up to 147, I mean, you know, and like I say, you know, it's a whole different, you know, it's a whole different beast, you know what I mean? So, you know, so I'm looking forward to a challenge. And you know, like I say, you know, that's what he's supposed to say to promote the fight, you know, but he knows what it is. He knows what he's getting in the ring with. So, you know, so fight night, we're going to see what's happening.
In mentioning with this interview, he said, you know, you've had problems with lefties, but you haven't faced a lefty like him, which he included that he's a much better lefty than Victor Ortiz.
You know, he's more skilled, and with Luis Collazo, a much more far skilled left-hand fighter that you're going to be facing. What's your thoughts?
Like I said, man, it is what it is. All of it sounds good, but, you know, come fight night, we're going to see. We're going to see where it's at. You know, that's it. You know what I mean? It is what it is. I mean, ever since my, you know, I mean, you get that from your first fight on. You know, people are going to say this and say that. So, you know, we're going to see what time it is come fight night.
There you go.
How you doing, Andre? It's Gabriel Montoya. Thanks
man,
for calling.
Up,
not much. You mentioned something. You know, I'm going to have to ask you a couple. You mentioned you had business with the commission. How did that all work out? Do you guys just kind of go in and have a private hearing and they just did the license and that was it?
No, we had to go through a lot of different steps, man. You know, because, you know, of course, everybody knows that, California State Athletic Commission, one of the best commissions out there, and, you know, one of the biggest commissions out there, and I had to go through, it all. You know, everybody, they pretty much had to test a sample that, you know, I mean, I tested a sample that I was corrupted or I was contaminated, and I just go through the whole process, man. They had to test me in and out, you know, up and down, around the corner, you know, every which way they could test me. You know, they did that, and you know, and then they see everything was clean, everything was little. Was legit, and you know, even from the sample that they found that you know, they came before a positive test. I mean, you know, the thing was, you know, they seen it, that it was a contamination of something. It was nothing to do with any type of you know, enhancement, anything. You know, it was just small traces of some type of contamination that caused the false test. So,
yeah.
You know, it is what it is. I had to go through what I had to go through, and you know, now we're here.
Well, I remember when I was told it was nandrolone, I was like, what, does he have a time machine? Because that's like a, you know,
exactly.
90s drug. Interesting that they handled it that way. I mean, because it – your case, I tried to explain it. I know you read the articles I wrote about it. It's interesting because it's – when you say contamination, people go, oh, bullshit, you know, just a story.
Right.
But there's hundreds of cases of nandrolone contamination.
Oh,
right.
Of course.
And yeah.
I didn't know anything about it. I don't know. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it meant. And again, I was doing all my research on it. So many different ways to get, you know, contaminated by nandrolone. So, you know, from
food.
You know, everyday situation, everyday food, with any, you know, everyday situation. So, and just the test that we did, you know, we pulled, and we wanted to ask for the vomit testing because we know that it was extremely sensitive. So any type of fighter that if they were taking something months before, you know, the vomit testing could pick up and find traces of it. That's the reason why we picked it, because it was extremely, you know, sensitive. But, you know, like I said, you know, picks up some everything. So, you know, the situation.
What about the people that, you know how kooky the internet is? People go, well, you went with VADA testing because you were with Victor Conte and he wants you to fight it, and they know the thing. You know, talk to me about that, because I know he wasn't really fully in your camp anymore at that point.
No.
Can you address all that?
And no, he was. I mean, I didn't have anything to do with it at all. And you know, why would I want to take Ronda testing for freaking hide it? But then again, I'm the one that, you know, they found, you know, a contamination in my blood sample. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Right. How shocked were you?
Oh, man, I was extremely shocked. I just didn't know what to do. You know, I was right in the middle of camp. Everything was going tremendously well, and I just couldn't understand it. I'm like, oh man, you know, the last situation happened. Now this happened, like, and it didn't waste any time. You know, so when we got the news about it, it hit. You know, it hit all of the newspapers. It hit the you know, ESPN on TV. Like, everything is crazy. I mean,
right.
Almost overnight, so I was devastated. I'm just like, hey, man, everybody knows me. Everybody knows, you know, my family, and you know, we pride ourselves off hard work. You know, we don't know anything about all that other, extra stuff. We pride ourselves off hard work. That's it. That's the only thing that makes sense to us. And just the fact that, a situation like that can come about and just feel like, it threw some shade, any type of taint up, anything that we did. It was just embarrassing. It was just, I was just hurt extremely by it.
Let me ask you, when finding out, obviously right now you're talking about how surprised you were, but how much in play in your mind did you start questioning the people that are around you? You know what I mean? There had to have been some doubt of trust there with the folks that have been in your surrounding, in your camp.
I mean, realistically, it didn't, because everything that we took them the last, two camps, and uh-huh. Vada came the first time, I was going to fight Ortiz, and we were taking all the same supplements. Everything was exactly the same. Everything. And they came and tested me twice then, and now, just this go around, it came up, it came up like that. So I just didn't understand what was going on.
You know, you were doing this out of your, out of your own will. You were being an advocate of saying, I'm going to do this VADA testing. And it had a, like you said, it was a shocking moment here, but. Now going back into this, going back and shaking this setback that you had for a short minute here, how much more awareness, though, for yourself as a fighter now that you kind of see what situation that situation got you in, that you've tried to correct in your training camp and in your life at the same time?
I mean, just everything in general, because, because I used to hear certain things about guys that have positive tests for crazy situations. I mean, for eating hamburger seeds. I mean, I had like poppy seeds on it or this
right.
and that. This, I didn't really take any of that stuff seriously at all. I'm like, okay, but now just me being in this situation, I'm like, wow. You have to be particular. And then just the fact of, a few months ago when I was going through the situation, the Olympics were going on, and I remember, a lot of Olympians, they're a friend of mine, they were getting advised, by the USA Commission, Olympic Commission, guys like that. Just basically saying, hey, you go to China, or you go to, China, right?
Yeah. Well, this year was London,
okay,
yeah.
Just basically be careful what you eat, because if you eat too much of this or too much of that, it can probably cause for a positive test. I'm like, wow, it's real serious out there. So it was just the aspect of me just extremely, just cleaning up my diet, man, to the extreme, and just really, being extremely careful. And when I put in my mouth, it's just, the supplements over food. It's just like the main approach that I'm taking.
I got one more question, and then I'm done. I'll pass it over to Gabriel really quick. Seeing this fight, and I got to tell you, I love this fight. This is going to be a tremendous fight in Southern California, man. And I applaud you for a comeback fight. Coming back from this layoff, you're going to be fighting a guy that skill-wise, I think he's very, very tough. But this is a division where he won a title and he fought Aiden, who was a tough welterweight, and you see that he's a tough guy. What do you think, though, he poses as a threat at 147, or do you even think he is a threat to you at 147 at all?
I mean, right now I believe, right now it's fun. I mean, everybody's a threat. Everybody's a threat. Everybody wants to, be in the money division and wants to fight the top guy. That's it. So they're gonna get in shape. They're gonna be in the best of their ability to do that. But just me just being there at the Aiden fight, watching. Aiden, he's a tough welterweight. I say tough welterweight as in, putting his guard up, walking to you, and taking a gang of shots just to land one hard shot. You know, he's a tough walker. That's exactly what he did. You know, the whole fight, he just put his hands up tight and just kept walking towards, you know, Robert. You know, the only thing Robert kept doing is just kept trying to turn him. But then again, just me sitting there, I'm seeing Aiden hurt him and hurt him and hurt him once you start opening up a little bit. So, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, like I say, he's a very skilled fighter. You know, he's a tough fighter. You know, we'll have to see where he's at.
Do you think it's going to be? I mean, because you're not a. I don't know if I think of you as a pure boxer. You're kind of more of a puncher. You're an explosive fighter. I know you can box. You've definitely got those kind of skills. But you're a fighter. You know, is that how you're going to have to treat him? Because I think he's more of the volume puncher and more of a boxer. I think more of a volume puncher now that 47. You got to be rough with him, right?
I think come about. You know. Like two different ways with it. I mean, like you said, you guys see me box, you guys see me bang it out. You know what I'm saying? It's like I'm punch hard. I mean, so there's a lot of different ways I can come about it. So, you know, right now we're just putting together a game plan, you know, trying to make sure they execute come fight night.
And let me ask you something. People are hitting me on Twitter, and we'll wrap this up pretty quick. I don't want to keep hammering the same thing, but I don't like myths. I like to dispel them. And people are attributing, they're saying you guys aren't doing VADA testing because Berto refused it. And I'm pretty sure that's not true.
I'm seeing guys saying that Robert refused it too. So that's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys both wanted it. And because of the history, right, the Golden Boy and Al kind of decided they've made their decision what company they want to use.
Everybody just came to the table, just wanted just to take VADA test. I mean, wanted to do VADA testing. So yeah, that's where I want to go.
Yeah, it is what it is. Well, you know, I'm very curious about the fight. You know, I think it's style wise, it can't not be an action fight. I think it's going to be all that. Do you think your experience in the full on war that was the Ortiz fight? Do you think that's going to be a difference that you've learned a lot from that fight? Or do you feel like all this has kind of interrupted your progress and it's kind of hard? You're going to have to take some time to kind of get back on track as a fighter. What has this all done for you?
No, I mean, just everything in general, man. It just basically just put me in a space, you know, where I needed to be. You know, I mean, you know, within this last year, you know, I went through a lot. And I believe, you know, these are the things you had to go through as men to really I really understand the situation that you're in, understand, you know, what's going on around you, and just put a lot of things in perspective. So within this last year, I've learned a lot, just a tremendous bit, you know, about myself, about the fight game, you know, just about a lot of things in general. So I believe, you know, of course, it's unfortunate, a lot of things I went through, and you know, and it hurt tremendously, you know, but then again, now, you know, I'm blessed to get put back in the position that, you know, I'm just going to take full advantage of it and just stepping forward, you know, just continue just to use everything I've learned to my advantage.
Would you, before we let you go, the VADA testing, if it was free, would that have been taken? Do you think Al Haymon and Golden Boy would have jumped on that?
I'm not sure at all. You know, I'm not sure at all, you know, when it comes to the VADA testing. I know for a fact it just left a bad taste in everybody's mouth that was involved with the promotion of the fight, I believe, because of the fact, the way that it came out. Nothing got explained. Nobody knew what it was, what was going on. It was just, you know, it was a positive test, and they just basically he just got blasted, you know. So of course, any and everybody could just take that and run with it for whatever they think it is, you know. So I believe that's the way they carried the situation. I think it just left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
So do you think, in a lot of ways, that this fight, not only alone, you're facing Guerrero, but at the same time, you're facing him trying to, you know, clean up your name with some of the fans that have kind of labored you, you know, a cheer and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I believe the fans are going to the only thing that people want to see right now at this point. You know, they see me go through the stuff that I went through. You know, but then again, they just want to see me back in the ring with performance. That's the only thing that's going to make sense to them. They want to see me continuing, you know, going through
sure.
the testing and the equity, you know, going there and fight. So that's what I plan on doing.
I applaud you for that.
Yeah,
I applaud you for not just the tough fight, but for the fact that you continued with the testing. I think that's... Your case is really interesting to me, and I felt it was really important to write a couple things about it and be really clear
right.
because we were talking to somebody earlier because, you know, apparently Eric Morales has tested positive. Not every drug is equal, and you got to look at those things, you know. I think it's important for us to look at things case by case. You know, your case is so different than everybody else's case. So I know you got to get going, but I want to thank you for coming on and being
absolutely
honest with us, Andre. Thank you.
Yeah, that's no problem, man. I just want to just come back, man, and speak to my guys and just speak to all the fans and just let us say everybody know we're back in there and we're just going to have to just come back in there and go to work, baby.
There we go, brother, man. Hey, thanks again. Your honesty is it's really appreciated, man. We appreciate you,
appreciate
too, coming
no
on
problem.
And speaking to us, brother.
Thanks, man.
No problem. Thanks,
all right, champ. Take care.
Andre Berto is going to be facing Robert the Ghost Guerrero, and it's going to be a great, great night of fights for fight fans, you know. You know, not everybody is convinced that Robert is on full 147, and not everybody's convinced that coming off of a loss and a long layoff that Berto's going to be up and ready for Robert the Ghost Guerrero. I think right now everybody's 50-50. I know that your thoughts is Berto, you know, probably having the upper hand against Robert. I'm like right in between that fence, but I'm really leaning with Robert just because of the consistency, and he's continued to impress and really show, you know, that he's just got it. He wants it, you know. I'm not saying that Berto doesn't want it as much, but I think there's more riding in terms with both guys, but I just kind of see it more heavier weight for Robert the Ghost Guerrero. But there's a lot there to prove, even though, you know, Berto, with this setback, there's stuff there to prove. But there's stuff there to prove that he's not a cheater, not the fact that he's a fighter and he belongs at 147. Robert has a lot to prove that he's one of the best, wants to fight the best, and wants to state his case why he should fight the best at 147.
Yeah, it's a fun fight. There's a lot of storylines, and these guys have a lot to prove. Both of them do, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Hey, thanks, everybody. We had some great interviews here. 347-215-7598. If you miss Berto, you miss Andre Berto and Robert the Ghost Guerrero here on Leaving the Ring, don't worry about it. You can catch it on iTunes or go back to the website. It takes about maybe 30 minutes to refresh, and it replays back for you here on Leaving the Ring. Every Thursday night, 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. I think we're going to be rolling into the fight schedule because we got some fights to talk about that's coming up this weekend. One of them is the headline, Danny Garcia and Eric Morales. May, I don't know. There's some talk that it could be called off. I don't see that happening. I kind of see them kind of going through with it. It's so close. But then again, you know what? This is boxing.
Yeah, that's, you know, damn it. You know what I hate? Is the guest leaves and you remember the, you know, you think of the question that you really should have asked.
I hate that. Yeah, I really do.
But, you know, at the same, I mean, you want to be respectful in interviews. You only know you got 15 minutes. You know, I know people are probably thinking, well, you should have hammered him more. Like, where was the dark cloud? Or, you know, Dave, where was Dave's baseball bat? But, you know, we're not bringing him on. It's not gotcha journalism. And they tell us, you know, you got him for 15 minutes. He gave us 4 extra minutes.
I thought he answered some really tough questions. I mean,
you try to be balanced in between, like he is on to talk about his fight, you know, so we do have to mix those in. I thought we did.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. But at the same time, people were forgetting that, you know, you investigated it really, really well, that there were some key facts in there that we could go back and go, oh, okay, I understand. For one, the nanodrone being an ID drug, it's not something that's going to, you know, really up your game or anything like that. And for two, this was a guy that was willing to take the test freely. You know, and number three, out of the cases of Americans right now that have been
under the VADA testing or USADA, whatever testing, getting caught. Not caught. I can't find the right word to use.
Caught is right. Well, yeah, tested positive. Is
tested positive. Okay, he tested positive. Umberto was willing to come on and speak to us. Now, was it right away? Absolutely not. You know what I mean? There had to be collateral damage out of it and stuff. But he's got a fight coming up. It was just announced. He could have held off. He could have held off for some time. He could have been protected. But instead, he said, "You know what? I'm going to come on and I'm going to take." What these guys are going to dish out. So I applaud that. You know, I really, really do, you know. And I thought we owed him some respect that the fact that he did willingly take that VADA testing and he did willingly come on, leave the ring, and he did willingly continue his career and face one of the tougher opponents out there right now at 147 for himself as a comeback and a long layoff.
You know, it's not an easy fight. Robert Guerrero, you know, coming up to 47. I mean, both of those guys, like I said, they had something to prove. But regardless, even if he's not a true 47, I think he can show with Aiden he can handle getting whacked at 47. It's not an easy style for Berto. You know, he's shown that lefties give him a little bit of trouble. Boxers give him a little bit of trouble. I mean, they give everybody trouble. So it's going to be a fun fight, you know. I just hope I can be able to find a comp to it. So. That's one of the other stories that I find interesting about this Golden Boy, this Golden Boy card is that they're giving away tickets like they're going out of style. There's 1,000 that are being donated to I believe a charity, or if you lived in Brooklyn, 250 tickets were being given away and you could show up. And as one guy mentioned today, those tickets were given away, but they were slashing prices for the $100 tickets down to $25, which is great. I think that price point was probably right on the money, and maybe they're figuring out the market. We give them the benefit of the doubt. But if I'm Kathy Duva or from anybody that's promoting in New York or hoping to, you're kind of looking at what they're doing to the market, coming in, discounting the hell out of prices, papering the house. You know, you have to ask, is a full house okay, or is a paid house what you really want? If you act like it's a hit enough times, maybe eventually you build a hit. But in the midst of all that, the Garcia Morales is a fight that is now in jeopardy, or even worse, just in jeopardy of being a precedent that's not good for the sport of boxing, where a guy tests positive and they go for it anyways. You're already seeing some guys half-ass defending Morales on Twitter going, well, you know,
he's old.
It's a diuretic. You know, what's the big deal? It's just a diuretic, but, you know, it's called rules and safety. This is a man's sport where people hit each other in the face. It's dangerous enough as it is. Good Lord, you go forward with a fight where a guy's got a positive test and you don't know what the drug is? I don't know about all that. It's going to be very interesting the next couple of days.
I think so as well. You know, and for the folks that are defending him, I think that's what separates hardcore boxing fans from just the casual idolized fans, you know?
Well, you can be too partisan, yeah. You know, yeah, you know, I mean,
to be fair, I see a lot of guys that are supposed journalists or own websites that can really just kind of jump on the wagon of one particular fighter and stuff, you know, but they don't want to be able to kind of separate themselves and understand that you got to report, you know, whether you like this guy. I've reported about guys that I like, that I've met and I've hung out and BS'd here and there, but at the end of the day, we got a job, and that job is to report the truth. You know, and reporting that truth, it could sometimes narrow the hallway for us, you know, and we can attest to that, you know, and that's why I applaud, Scott Hale, who took it upon himself and run with this story, because those open doors that were so willingly to be open can be so willingly easy to be closed in your face. Anyways, we got to go with our fight schedule here on Leaving the Ring. Let's talk some boxing, some more boxing, and get out of our predictions here.
I'm going to stop muting myself. I thought you made wonderful points. Friday at the – it's already 7:30. It's crazy. At the Miccosukee Casino in Kimisee, Florida, on Telemundo, Orlando Cruz, the first openly gay fighter in the history of boxing, apparently, 18-2-1 versus Jorge Pazos, 20-4. Vicente Mosquero, who's the guy that Edwin Valero won his first title against, 32-1 versus Cosme Rivera, 35-14-3. It's kind of an interesting, you know, like it's like the old timers kind of fight, you know. Cosme Rivera, I didn't even know he was still fighting, but there you have it. Moving over to Saturday night at the event of the hour at the Barclays Center in New York City, New York and Brooklyn. It's a boxing return. Danny Garcia on Showtime, 24-0 versus Eric Morales, 52-8 for the WBC and WBA junior welterweight belts. I'm not sure if USADA is putting a belt on the line. And then we got Paulie Malignaggi versus Pablo Cano, 31-4, 25-1-1 for the WBA welterweight belt. And then you also have Peter Quillen, 27-0 versus Hassan Njikam, 27-0 for the WBO middleweight belt. And a very interesting bout. And finally in that quadruple header, Randall Bailey, 43-7 versus Devin Alexander, 23-1. Let's head back up top. Dave, Danny Garcia, Eric Morales, chemical warfare. What do you got?
You know, let's take out the chemical warfare and whether or not it's going to go through. But let's break it down. Honestly, I still see a lot of the same tactics that Danny used the first time around with Eric Morales. You know, the thing is, Eric Morales' face is it's been through wars. You know, and the swellings are always going to be there. The cuts are always going to be there. The nose broken is always going to be a factor into his game plan. It's how he adjusts to it. How does he incorporate those things and making it a positive. It's really difficult to do that when your face doesn't want to be, you know, doesn't want to play fair with your body, and especially in a boxing match against a kid that's young, strong, and hungry. It's against you. It's not with you. So I just see Danny fighting out that distance. The only thing is that Danny likes to swing heavy shots, and they could be telegraphed, you know, and you could see them. And Morales. He was able to see it the first time, and he was able to capitalize. This is something that the Garcia camp's got to tighten up. Did do it with Amir Khan? No. As a matter of fact, it worked for him, but didn't work with Morales. He's got to do the other thing, which is throw the punches down the line. That's why he was successful with Eric Morales and tattooing his face and breaking that nose, you know. So he's got to kind of stay calm. I know that first time around, I may think that I have my thoughts is that, you know, he's fighting a legend. Big, huge fight, money, big fights up ahead for him. So he was being a little tentative. I think this time he's going to be a little bit more relaxed. And it's always said, when you're champion, you tend to there tends to be a change in you. So I think we're going to see a champion in Danny Garcia. And I think we might see the end of what Eric Morales can do. Whatever he can muster up, we're going to see it. I think it's going to be a great fight, fantastic fight. But I think all the evens are going to go for Danny Garcia.
Oh, Dan Raphael reported 5 minutes ago the test was positive for clenbuterol. So there you go. I think Eric Morales is also going to test positive for being old. He's just, you know, he's an aging fighter. And I think he started to show the signs in the last fight. Towards the end, he got dropped. Yeah, he was able to kind of fight through it. I think that's because Danny was kind of carrying the fight and was probably too tired to do anything about it. So, you know, I'm really curious to see where Danny, you know, after beating Amir Khan, did he get better as a fighter? Did he get better as a champion? Was it Amir's chin? Was it his game plan? Do they have something in store for Eric Morales? I'm not sure. You know, clenbuterol is also used as a weight loss drug, just so you know. Originally I thought it would be a diuretic or something along those lines, and that's looking what it's like for Mr. Morales. Is that do you consider that as performance enhancing? I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean,
I'll tell you what it does tell me is that he was having trouble making weight. Remember the media days or the commercials? You've seen the commercials for this.
Right.
It's like three fighters that look like they're young in shape and fighters and their fat uncle, Eric Morales, looking kind of fatter than I've seen him in a while. And maybe that was, you know, post-surgery and all that he was just kind of had to rest and put on the weight. But what this tells me is he didn't have the greatest camp or – you know, maybe he did. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe he did have a really good camp being on the drugs.
Even with a great camp, though. I mean, let's throw this out there. Look,
he's old
and
slow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Your age, really, it's what you were. Let's say you were able to run 6 miles and you were able to shed, you know, 6-8 pounds. When you start going up in age, those 6 miles only will end up shedding 2 or 3 pounds. You have to double it. And sometimes at that age, doubling it, you just have a tough time to, you know, get up for that extra amount of exercise. So I could see why they used it, but it falls into that case. You know, how do you justify it? A rule's a rule.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm not quite sure.
And just to throw out real quick, Linus put, let's to be fair, it's too early to draw conclusions about Morales's right now.
Not at this point, because actually, you know, I'm just looking, doing a quick search while you're.
It's too late, honestly, to announce. That should honestly be the thing. It's too late to announce right now on Thursday that he got popped.
It's interesting because it does, like nandrolone, have a history of contamination in food. In 2011, players at the National – this is according to Wikipedia. I'm doing a quick search, so
right.
don't hold me to all of this shit. But players of the Mexico national football team were found with clenbuterol in their bloodstreams but were acquitted by WADA after they claimed they got it from contaminated food. FIFA also claimed 109 players from the Under-17 World Cup in Mexico tested positive for this drug because Mexican meat is contaminated. Very interesting.
That is very interesting, you know, and – you know,
he did train in Mexico, so that's 2011. So you never know. I mean, it's this is just one case I'm pointing out. 2006, Giants pitcher Guillermo Moda, he got his 50-game suspension for testing positive for clenbuterol. What's interesting in the midst of this is that there was like a Mets guy, where is it? Former Mets clubhouse employee Kirk Radomski admitted in his plea deal to distributing clenbuterol to dozens of current and former Major League Baseball players and associates. So while it is, according to Mexico and WADA, found in Mexican meat, it's also apparently found in the Mets locker room, or was at one point, being distributed by somebody. So there's a brief history of clenbuterol.
But if it's a history of losing weight, and that's what I mean, there's got to be it's got to be clarified much more in terms of the bracket of what is used, what drug is hurtful to another fighter, in terms of what is hurtful to your body. You know what I mean? I think that has to be a separation of understanding. You know, and.
Well, here's the thing. I'm looking up the steroid.com, the benefits of clenbuterol. It goes without saying if you supplement with clenbuterol, you're going to burn more body fat. But as it was designed to treat asthma, you may already suspect it also improve greatly your cardiovascular efficiency.
Mm.
Even so, fat loss remains its primary force of action, but clenbuterol also unsuspectingly to many carries with it anabolic properties. There you go. Although the anabolic nature of this drug is very mild, it has been shown to have the ability to slightly increase fat-free mass. As you understand, the more fat-free mass we could hold, the more fat-free mass we hold, the greater our metabolism functions. Again, this only promotes the fat-burning abilities of clenbuterol.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it's probably a weight loss thing, but also it has anabolic properties, you know, muscle building. There you go. You don't take it by accident if you did, in fact, take it. Thank you to the person who sent me that. I also want to, Dave, I don't do shout-outs, but the people that were so nice, the fans who leave it in the ring, I believe Eric was one of the guys, and I'm terrible with names, so I meet people. The giant guy was making fun of Mark on Press Row. It was funny. It was really cool. So many people. There was a guy I gave a beer to. Again, if I talk to you and you listen to the show, just tweet at me and let me know it was you. I'll follow you back. And no liars out there, so you can just get followers. I'll know who you are by your picture.
Tweet us both, man, so we can follow you guys back and stuff. I think I follow the gentleman that we both follow each other that you met at the fights and stuff. But yeah, that's great. That was fantastic to hear.
It's nice when you do 3 hours every Thursday, and Dave, you know, I both know how hard it is to put the show together, much less do it. It makes it worth it. You know, somebody that's like, yeah, I like listening to your show and hearing the fighters. Like, fucking A. It's great. So anyways, back to Garcia Morales. Now that we've done our drug lesson, I got Garcia. I think he stops him late. I think he's just going to be too much for him. I think he's got his confidence at an all-time high. And now if he's got to eat this, and go forward with the fight with making more money. I think he's going to have something to prove. He's going to put it on him. Fighters always look for motivation. Just listening to Berto and listening to Guerrero, you can kind of see that. So, Garcia by late knockout.
Let's patch in some fight fans before we continue up. I know we only got a few more minutes, 15 more minutes, but we got some fight fans online right now that want to talk some boxing here with us.
Sure.
Let's go with John, who wants to talk Al Haymon. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and leaving the ring.
Hey, I just wanted to know, do you guys have any information or any help some of us understand what the deal is with Al Haymon and how he does what he does? You know, you guys had Andre Berto.
In terms of how he gets fights and is able to muscle the network sometimes? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and basically, you know, I know Andre Berto. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I know he makes great money fighting pushovers. I remember he fought, I think, Freddie Hernandez for over $1 million.
For 900 grand, yeah. It was like, he landed 9 punches and made 900 grand. That's actually an actual stat. 100 grand a punch. nice work if you can get it, right? You know,
right.
The thing about Al that's interesting is you know, I think I was one of the first people. I know Steve Kim was probably the first guy to really go in depth and write about him on a regular basis. It's hard to criticize him or his fighters because that's what a manager should do.
Well, we've been tough on about him and stuff like that. We recognize the fact that he's a good manager. You know, he's a great manager. He does exactly what he's paid to do.
But, I mean, in terms of how he got into his position,
right?
I've heard varying stories. I mean, I know he was a very successful concert promoter, decided to kind of move into boxing on a lark. He doesn't need the money. He's super wealthy. I don't think – he might be the richest guy in boxing of the behind-the-scenes people.
Right.
I don't know what Bob Arum's personal worth is, but I know Haymon's is quite high. But I think basically when he worked out to get Floyd – I've heard varying ways that this has happened. Generally, it's kind of the same story. I'm not that comfortable telling it. But he basically worked through HBO to get Floyd. Once he got Floyd, everything else followed. And you can tell, I mean, Floyd is – he may not sell out. He may sometimes have to give away some tickets, but he sells pay-per-views. And that's all the networks care about is – you know, they don't care how many butts you put in the seat. They can always curtain it off and make it look like more. They can bump up the sound or lower the sound depending on their whimsy. But if the guy sells pay-per-views you know, he's in business, and Floyd sells more than anybody else. So Al gets to do what Al wants to do.
At the same time, though, let's, you know, to answer his question, how does he manipulate these networks to pay off these fighters such a big sum of money and get these dates? Well, I want to say it's a rumor, but, you know, I mean, sources have told us he's able to dangle big name artists above the nose of these networks by telling them I can get this or, you know, I can get this superstar on your network, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that just brings it more enticing for these networks to go, let me jump on that.
Well, that's what I've always kind of wondered about, and it was a pattern I was following a little bit, that maybe he has these other the out-of-the-way venues that he uses for the fighters. Sometimes if you check around the dates and you'll see, you know, like in Mississippi, one of those venues, or in Texas – you'll see like a big name artist also going through there, you know, either before or after that fight. And I know he's still involved in concert promotion or management. And I have to wonder, like, is that why this fight's happening there? It's like a quid pro quo kind of thing. You know, you put my fighter here, I'll bring you this guy. If you pay me a larger than normal site fees, we can augment the guy's salary. You know, I'll bring you, you know, X guest. I'm not a business major. I'm a boxing writer. But still, I kind of wonder that. You know,
I can't remember what fight where was that, but I remember he had brought Beyonce on that fight week. You know what I mean? So he did bring that crowd and stuff like that. So to answer your question, that's one of the main reasons. Obviously, there's other reasons too, John, but that's one of the big major reasons why he's able to manipulate these networks to get what he wants.
Yeah, it's not just Floyd. He's got kind of a cachet and a part of the industry that no other promoter has.
At the end of the day, he's a smart businessman. Can't hate on that.
Yeah.
Thanks, John, for calling in, brother.
Did we lose him? Oh.
No. Let's patch in another fight fan before we go back to that fight schedule really quick. Let's talk to George Jimenez. What's up, brother? He wants to talk Eric Morales. You're on live right now and leaving the ring.
Hey, guy. How's it going?
Good, brother. How you doing, man?
Good. I just wanted to share, you know, a personal story because I heard the name Clenbuterol in my younger days. I used that, and let me tell you, that stuff works. Not only did it make me stronger, it helped me lose weight, lose fat, and gives you a hell of a lot of energy. So
you're talking about clenbuterol? Yeah.
Clenbuterol, yes.
You've used it?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
When were you using
it? I used to work in a health food store, so I used to know a lot of people that, you know, took stuff, steroids and stuff. I never tried that stuff, but one of the bodybuilders told me that he would take that to kind of like slim down, like when he was getting ready to like burn fat to get like more definition, and he told me exactly how to use it. So basically, it's like, I think it went for like 10 weeks, and you start with like one pill, and you start working your way up to I think like 5, and then you kind of cycle off of that. And let me tell you, that stuff really works. So I tell you from experience. So I'm not surprised that he's taking that. I'm pretty sure he has some issues making the weight.
Right.
I know that Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. also tested positive for that in the past, and you know, they said something about also being in the food. I don't think that if you eat beef, clenbuterol will be in that. I mean, you want the cows to gain weight, not lose weight. So, you know, I think that's an excuse. I hope I'm wrong, but it's just sad that a legend like Morales will do that. You know.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, I mean, I wonder where they're getting their beef from. You know, is it in front of a supplement store in a.
I get my meat at GNC.
Exactly.
Like what?
Tres tacos de lengua, man, por favor. With a little bit of sprinkled neural.
I'm getting back as I heard the drug, I got DM'd it, you know, just started asking all my friends, quote unquote, you know, what's this drug do, you know, real quick, and as I was, you know, Googling it at the same time. And, yeah, it came right back. It has anabolic properties, but it's not a steroid. It burns fat like
right.
crazy.
Right.
And exactly. You see him in that media day, and you go, same thing with Tarver. Remember at the press conference, he didn't want to take his shirt off. You know, Latif was, like, lifting up his shirt, and that dude's ripped. And Tarver was like, yeah, I'm good, you know.
Right.
I don't need to be flashing my titties right now. and then he gets nailed for pretty much a fat burner later on, you know. So it is what it is. I mean, now we get into the question, is that drug, what define performance enhancing? It's like Clinton,
exactly.
You know, define penetrate, you know. So
inhaled.
Yeah, inhale or the. How do you mean the word the? Opens up a can of worms.
Exactly, you know. Define how you're going to fix our taxes. Just stop saying that you're going to stop China trading. But, yeah, you're absolutely right, you know.
What happens? I mean, the next guy goes along and goes, all right, well, I guess I could just pay the money, you know, and have the fight go through if I can get the other guy to agree to the cash. You know, it's just an ugly precedent. Where does it stop?
Right.
You know, oh,
right.
I tested positive for testosterone. Well, yeah, but I was really low T, so I'm kind of normal now. You know, I'll pay you 100
right.
grand.
Right.
It's just, ugh, thanks, Golden Boy. You're not cleaning things up. You're making them more muddy if you go through with this fight.
Exactly. And just really quick, George Jimenez is the host of Noche de Boxeo. It's on every Monday night, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. East Coast. Hey, brother, thanks for calling in. We're going to get right back to our fight schedule. It's always fun when you come on and speak to us, bro. Hey, thanks for
like
know that you were taking that stuff, dude. Good
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, it works, man.
All right, man.
All right,
no, you know, I actually find the stuff that Chavez Jr. Was using, and you know, that works, too. So you know,
I just hey, George, real quick. I just bought a dog, dude. I gotta send you pictures of my dog because I always see your dog Maximus on Facebook, man.
Oh yeah, Vicky was looking at it. Really cute.
Yeah. All right,
guys.
About the diuretic. All right.
Let's get back to that fight schedule here on Leaving the Ring. We're almost about up with time and stuff.
Paulie Malignaggi, Pablo Cano. I just think it's a nice welcome home present for Malignaggi. Cano is game, but he's just outclassed.
Yeah, he's really game. He's going to come forward. He's going to do as much as he can. But, you know, you're going to see the level of difference with Paulie Malignaggi. Great homecoming fight for him.
But this is, I think, the fight of the night. And it's interesting. I remember there was another, it was a pay-per-view, so it was like a quadruple header. This one's obviously not. It's on Showtime. It's free, but or our definition of free. But there was another middleweight WBO title fight. involving an Al Haymon fighter who had not really fought the stiffest of tests and then was put in with a guy that was from overseas and he ended up getting knocked out. And that was – he actually is fighting on this card, Daniel Jacobs.
Who we've had on, you know, when he did his very first interview, it was with Leaving the Ring, and he, you know, explained to us what was going on, and it was a tremendous story. So
and,
it's good to see
him back. Yeah, it's nice that he's coming back. I'm not taking a shot at him, but I just think I've seen this before. Peter Quillen versus Hassan Engekam. I really think I like Engekam's chances. I don't know how much you've seen him. He's very YouTubeable. He's got a lot of fights on there. The guy moves a lot. He moves as much as Sergio Martinez. His defense is kind of leaky, but he's got nice fast hands. And he's got power, particularly, you know, he fought Gennady Merritt-Rosian, who's kind of a sitting duck guy, but he's a rugged, kind of almost like a Billy Lyle, but like more squat and kind of
right.
More of a brawler. But he went almost a distance with Pirog. I think the fight ended on cuts. And in this fight, when he fought him, Engekam knocked him out with like one punch in the 10th. You know, it was a one-punch knockout. I mean, he outboxed his ass up to that point. So I think Quillen is in tough here.
I think he's been really tough, to tell you the truth, you know?
First fight in six, Dave, that he's fought somebody not coming off a loss or a few losses.
And this is going to be, honestly, put in tough, which Golden Boy is known to do, you know what I mean? They'll give you a lot of softies, and all of a sudden, boom, they give you a guy that's, you know, that hasn't come off a loss, who's a tough customer in skill-wise and has got a good punch. It can all spell for destruction. It's their way of flirting to find out where their fighter stands. So it could be a good night for Peter Quillen, or he can melt like chocolate on that Saturday night.
I think he can knock him out. I think it's very possible that it could come out. But, you know, at the same time, he's also chinny, and he can be, you know, he was knocked out of the ring at one point in the fifth round. But he does come back to win, and if he's undefeated, you know, I mean, he was about as knocked out as I'd seen, or knocked down as somebody as I'd seen in one fight, all the way through the ropes, and he got himself back together. So he can be hurt, but he has recuperative power. I know people on.
I think Peter Quillen has the better chin, to tell you the truth, in this one here. You know,
Seen him, but I also haven't seen him face a puncher.
That's really true. You know, I think it's I'm edging with Kid Chocolate with this one here, but it's a huge possibility. Would I be surprised if he's stopped or he's beaten? No, but I wouldn't be surprised if he stops his opponent and he's victorious on it and he looks good at doing it.
It's a 50-50 fight. I'm not sitting here. Absolutely, I'm going to call my Engekam shot, but I'm picking him to win. And I do think he drops him late or something.
I got Peter Quillen. I think he wins. I think he beats him by points.
Well, I'll put a beer on it then.
There we go.
No shoes. This one, we're right. We really agree. No shoes on it. Is that? Wow. But yeah, Daddy needs a new pair of shoes. I should bet you money. I think we're in agreement here. Devin Alexander, UD over Randall Bailey. Maybe late stoppage if he's feeling particularly nasty.
You know what? He's just got to do something really dumb in order for Bailey to land, connect, and lights out. You know, Bailey has just kind of showed me an older guy, an older fighter that just trails like a horse. You know, you allow him, he'll work his way in it, work, and that's if you give him that opportunity. Alexander's the younger guy, the more mobile guy, the more skilled guy, in my opinion here. It should be his night, unless he does a foul-up, and he pays dearly for that foul-up.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's his fight to lose. You know, it just really is. I mean, and Randall, you know, if he lets his hands go, I mean, he can win. We've seen him do the impossible
right.
With that right hand. So it's very, you know, it's possible, but I think we get a replay of kind of the Mike Jones fight with probably a little more activity and without the knockout. At the Motor Point Arena in Sheffield, England, earlier in the day, if you're in America, Kell Brook, 28-0, takes on Hector Saldivia, 41-2. I'm going with Kell Brook. I'm going late stoppage I don't know. What do you think? Robin Reed's fighting on this card. Good Lord.
I think I'm excited to see Robin Reed, to tell you the truth. I like Kell Brook. I'm going to take him, too. I'm going to go with your pick.
At the Mall of Asia Arena in Pasay City, Philippines. I need to go there just because it's called that. AJ Bernal, 28-1-1 versus Peng Luang Sor Singyu, 42-1 for the WBO Bantamweight belt. I'm going with AJ Bernal. I don't know about you.
I'll go with my decision. I'm
going
to go with AJ Bernal, too.
And if you get it on the stream, and I bet you Sweet Boxing will, at the Plaza de Toros in Calafia, Mexicali, Mexico, Jorge Paez Jr., 32-4-1 versus Charlie Navarro, 22-5. And that, my friends, is your weekend fight schedule.
There you go. Another 3-hour show here on Leaving the Ring. I thank everybody that tunes in and listens to us. Like I said, if you missed this whole segment here, don't worry about it. It replays on the website, or you can catch us on iTunes. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Once again, everybody, thank you for tuning in. Don't drink and drive, because if you drink and drive, you might spill your beer.
And, Dave, as always, great show, dude. It was really fun, spontaneous. It was one of our best ones in a little while. I mean, there's the fun interviews and surprise guests and Guerrero. Dave, I will see you at the fights.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for Mauro Serrano, man, for making that happen. Anyway,
yeah,
everybody,
without question.
Have a good night.